Blog Talk Radio.
The countdown to signing day is here. About 11 hours and counting. Has the signing day kind of crept up a little bit on the Miami Hurricanes? It just seems so different this time around with, you know, new head coach Mario Cristobal being in the house just for about a week. And just not a whole heck of a lot of buzz around recruiting this year. It's weird, okay? It's really weird. So tonight, as we begin a new edition of Cane Sport Live, we'll go through the signing day class and discuss what it really means and what it means in the big picture for Cristobal and the Hurricanes. We'll be joined by Cane Sport Managing Editor Matt Schodel, who will discuss a little bit of his experiences covering some of these recruits. And then later in the night, we'll be joined by South Florida recruiting expert Larry Bluestein, who will discuss with us the whole landscape of recruiting in the state of Florida and what he thinks of this Miami Hurricanes recruiting class. So much to talk about that, the Cristobal arrival and everything else on an action-packed night of Cane Sport Live tonight. I'm Gary Furman, the publisher of canesport.com, and we welcome you once again to Cane Sport Live. As always, it's your show, and it'll be driven by your participation. The call-in number, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. Plenty of open phone lines for everybody to call in and participate. By now, you know the drill if you've called in before, and if you don't, here's what you do. You hit the 1 on your keypad after you call in. That puts you in the queue, and we bring you on the show in the order that you land on the queue. We're not going to waste a lot of time tonight talking. I'm going to let you get to your questions, see what you have to say. Like I said, we'll have Matt Schodel and Larry Bluestein on as the night goes forward. We'll talk a little bit about this signing class. So let's begin with your phone calls. Again, the number 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. And we're going to kick off tonight in the 845. You're live on Cane Sport Live.
Gary, I'm back where I should be, number one.
Number one, man. That's where you belong, Greg. How you doing this evening?
I'm good. How are you guys? I just got a couple quick questions. If we didn't get Mario, what the hell kind of recruiting class would we have, like 3 people?
No, truthfully, it would be very similar. You know, I'll go through it here in a minute. And, Mario made an impact on a couple of these kids. You know, I think that maybe like a Nigel E. Kelly, who I expect to drop to Miami tomorrow. I think Mario maybe had a role in closing that one. You know, there's a couple other kids. We'll see what happens. You know, like a Cyrus Moss, possibly. If he commits to Miami, you could say Mario had an impact there. But for the most part, look, you know, you get a job a week before signing day, you're not going to be able to do a whole heck of a lot. I mean, what are you going to do, go after all the kids you've been recruiting for Oregon and say, oh, geez, for the last 2 years I've been recruiting you at Oregon. I was only kidding. Now I want you to come to Miami. It's hard to make that sales pitch. And, you know, Mario took a shot with a couple linemen out in Texas, and it didn't appear to work out, unfortunately. But, you know, I mean, he was able to hold together, for the most part, what was there. And now it looks like a lot of more kids than usual are going to wait to sign in February. So there'll be several kids to recruit in the second cycle. And then I think you're going to see them hit the transfer portal very, very hard. And player evaluation in the transfer portal is going to be a big key for this program this year.
Okay. As far as this money that Texas was paying out to these players, is it going to come down to who's got the biggest bankroll? Is that how college football is going to work? I mean, it's ridiculous.
Hasn't it been that way, Greg? I mean, do you think this is new?
I understand. I know that, Gary, but that's blatant.
And who's telling you that Texas is paying them what they're paying them? Like, who's telling you this? Or are you just assuming?
I don't know. I'm reading it all over the place. I don't know.
I'm not saying they're not. I'm just saying that you're probably just making assumptions, though, because I don't know how you would know that.
Okay. All right. Mario's got supposedly $8 million to spend on assistant coaches. Do you have any names that how's Kendall Briles looking?
I think they've spoken. I think Kendall Briles is a very live candidate for the OC job. We'll see what other candidates emerge. Mario very, very, very seldom just settles on a guy and hires him. You know, he likes to bring guys in for interviews, sit them down in a room with other staff members, put them through a pretty rigorous interview process. Like, you know, he takes his coaching hires very seriously. I expect that to start happening after signing day tomorrow. I would think starting like Thursday, Friday, he would start going into overdrive in terms of putting together a staff. Who else is going to be on it? You know, obviously there's a few guys from Oregon. The receiver coach, McClendon, I think has a pretty likely chance to land on the staff. I would keep an eye on the defensive backs coach, Rod Chance. certainly the strength coach, Aaron Feld. So, you know, we'll see. In terms of who might stick from the current staff, I think Steve Field has a pretty good chance to stick. Probably is the tight ends coach, I would say. I don't know that that's guaranteed. Not out of the question that Mario might lean on him for another role in the program, because there's a lot to fix and he knows that he can count on Steve Field because Steve Field worked for him before. I have not really heard anything on defensive coordinator yet, other than some people have been bringing up the name Clint Hurt. I don't know if that would happen. He's believed to be ready for coordinator opportunities after putting his time in with the Seattle Seahawks for so many years. But don't really have a feel at this point for whether that would happen or not. So that's kind of where that is. I expect that to pick up a little bit in the coming days.
And what about T-Rob?
I believe T-Rob has a chance to stick on the staff as well as safeties coach. I do. We'll see. I mean, T-Rob's going to have opportunities. Yeah, so I have not seen T-Rob, so I have not had a chance to ask him. I don't know what his personal agenda is in terms of whether he wants to stay and work for Mario or not, but I've heard that there's a reasonable chance that he might be asked to stay on the staff and that he would accept.
Did you know that on the 2015 Alabama staff, there's six guys that are making upwards of $5 million as a coach right now? You got Mario, you got Lane Kiffin, Billy Napier, Mel Tucker, Kirby Smart, and the guy from Georgia who just took the Oregon job.
Well, people know that Saban assistants know the blueprint, and that's very appealing to people, as it should be. He's the best coach probably in college football history when you look at his record, and we're certainly one of the top couple. You'd have to go way, way back. I mean, and why wouldn't people be interested in guys that have been Saban's right-hand guys the last several years? They have the blueprint. What Mario Cristobal brought to Miami is the Saban blueprint. Trust me. There's not going to be a lot of difference between what they do at Bama and what they start doing at Miami.
Well, I hope you're right. All right, guys. Thank you. Have a good night.
All right, Greg. Thanks for getting us started tonight. 563-999-3550. Hit 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. Let me take a second now and just run through real quick what we expect the signing day class to look like. I'll go position by position. Quarterback, Ja'Quarri Brown looks like he's going to stick. The Canes have been recruiting him for a very long time. He's a Rhett Lashley recruit. Seems 100% committed to Miami and looks like he might have a bright future ahead as a dual-threat quarterback. So we expect Ja'Quarri Brown to stick in the class. At wide receiver, we think Isaiah Horton from Tennessee will stick in the class. It's looking that way right now. He's been committed to Miami for a very long time. We're not so sure about Landon Ibieta from Louisiana. He's been committed to Miami for a long time, but things have seemed a little lukewarm lately as signing day has approached. He may be a little bit of a reach for Miami, but I say that, but at the same time, he's been getting a lot of offers lately, and LSU, which was an offer he was waiting for from the very beginning, has now offered, and we think that's where he ends up. We think he's going to be a defection on signing day, that he'll defect from Miami and end up signing with LSU. But we'll see for sure tomorrow. Other wide receivers to keep an eye on, I would say Kevin Coleman from the St. Louis area. He's down to Miami, USC, and Florida State. Now, he's probably not going to sign tomorrow. He has said that he is going to wait to announce until his All-Star game on January the 8th. Whether it's drama or he goes through with that, you know, we don't know, but we do like the chances for Miami to eventually land Kevin Coleman whenever it is. Mario's been fishing around with Jaden Gibson, who's the, Miami was looking fairly decent with him early before he kind of swayed a little bit from the Canes camp. Most people think if he's going to Oklahoma, FSU and Georgia are also in it. There will be a Cane hat on the table. So we'll talk about him tonight and include him on our list. Truth is, we are not expecting Jaden Gibson in this class. And then another guy that we're just, that we've got on our radar a little bit is a kid by the name of Darius Clemens. You might ask why. He's never visited Miami. But having never visited Miami, he is listing the Canes in his top five, along with Michigan, Auburn, Oregon, and Penn State. So we do think he's going to Michigan, but we'll pay attention to what he does tomorrow as well. Tight end, the only one Miami's really been recruiting is Jaleel Skinner, who's committed to Alabama. Most Alabama commits do not sway, but we think that this one's not over until it's over. I would probably put it 75-25 Bama, but Jaleel Skinner's always liked Miami, and he did come down and visit this past weekend. So, he didn't have to do that. So you just, you never know there. Offensive line, Miami's got a commit from Valencia Carswell. I'm a little concerned about this one. I think that there's legitimate noise that he might go to Ole Miss. He visited Ole Miss a couple weekends ago. Seems to have been a little bit more affected, departure of Manny Diaz. Not sure why, because he's certainly upgrading in terms of the offensive line coaching that he would receive at Miami. So we're going to be watching Carswell very closely tomorrow. But, right now it's looking to us like he might defect to Ole Miss. On the defensive line, Nigel E. Kelly is a guy that's been getting an enormous amount of attention from Mario Cristobal. Cristobal recruited him very hard when he was at Oregon, and it even looked like Kelly might go out to Eugene for college. But now that Cristobal's in Miami and recruiting him here, it makes the decision to stay home, which is something he might have done anyway, much easier. We'll be surprised if Nigel E. Kelly does not pick Miami. A couple other defensive linemen we're watching. Kid by the name of Cyrus Moss. He visited this past weekend for a day. Canes and USC have been pushing hard. Arizona State is also in it. We think Miami has a pretty good chance here. At worst, I would say it's a toss-up. He says he's going to wait till Friday to announce. Not sure whether or not he will hold to that, but we think Miami has a chance with Cyrus Moss. Jeffrey Emba, this one's a little bizarre, okay? He left Wichita, Kansas for his home country of France on Wednesday and is planning to announce his decision on a TV station in France on Sunday. Don't ask. Okay, his final five is Miami, Tennessee, Missouri, Auburn, and Oregon. He visited Miami when Manny Diaz was here, has not visited since. So we're watching what he does, but we consider Miami a bit on the outside looking in at this point. Another guy to keep an eye on, I would say, is Cyrus. No, I spoke about Cyrus Moss. Sorry, I'm losing my spot here. All right, let's move to linebacker, where Wesley Bissaint is committed, and we think he's going to stick. He took an official visit over the weekend that seemed to help shore things up. Bissaint has a chance to play very early in his Hurricane career, and we are expecting him to stick in the class tomorrow. Moving on to DBs. There's a transfer out of Alabama named Marcus Banks that we're keeping an eye on. Miami's very high up along with Kentucky, Mississippi State, and Missouri. We like the chances, but he's been keeping his thoughts to himself, so we're not really sure, but we'll be watching him tomorrow. We're also going to be watching Chris Graves very closely. He's committed to the Canes. At various points, there were concerns here with Florida and LSU regarding him, but he really has never wavered, and we think that he'll stick with Miami come tomorrow. Earl Little Jr., a guy that's flirted with Miami and Florida State all through recruiting, we think it's all been a smokescreen. We think he's going to Alabama. Kamari Rogers, who's been committed to Miami forever, another one that's gotten some feelers and stuff back home, but we think at the end of the day, he'll also stick with Miami. Safety Markeith Williams, we're expecting him to be a solid commitment in this class tomorrow. And a cornerback that we're keeping an eye on is a kid by the name of Jaden Harris. He visited Miami under the prior coaching staff. He has an idea what the program's all about. Mario Cristobal has continued to chase him since being hired. We're not like overly optimistic here, but we do think there's a chance, and it's one to monitor as he also considers Kansas State, Missouri, and Georgia Tech. So we'll see what happens there. So that's the picture for tomorrow. Pretty simple. Not the typical drama, like I said, of your usual national signing day. Is that good or bad? I guess that's in the eyes of the beholder. You know, I mean, it is what it is. It's you know, you can't change it for this cycle. And Miami's going to have to make the best of it and then get to work in terms of the late signing period and the transfer portal. All right, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you're going to come on the show. Let's go to the 305. You are live on Transport Live. How are you doing tonight?
Good, Gary. How are you?
Doing great. What's up, Adam? How are you doing?
Good. A couple things. One, do you think it actually works to Miami's advantage that players like Shamar Stewart and they can evaluate like to Leo Flores and like they're signing later so that they can really – and the kid out in Washington who I think either you or 24/7 wrote an article on, the O-linemen out in Washington are signing later so that Miami could get
– Yeah,
go ahead.
Got
sorry
nine...
for interrupting.
We've got 9 recruits right now, Adam, that we're monitoring that seem to be looking at Miami that are going to sign in the late period. That's a lot, man. I mean, that is by far the most I've seen since this early signing day got instituted a few years back. You know, you've got several offensive linemen, you know, including the kid from out in Seattle, Josh Connerly Jr., who's a very highly regarded kid. You've got a couple defensive linemen in Ahmad Moten and Shamar Stewart, and you got a few D backs like you said with Jaheel Florence as one of them. So, it's different, and I don't know what the explanation is for it, but, it's going to be, and there's going to be more. There will be more, and it's going to be interesting to monitor these guys along with transfers in the second cycle.
Oh, okay. Because I'm thinking, and then there was this Oregon kid that from Alabama, this TJ Dudley, who I think we were thinking about taking a look at, and then we just passed on him, a four-star. Is there any way Miami revisits that or no?
Don't think so.
Okay. Just wondering in terms of numbers. A couple things. On the coaching carousel for DC, do you see Miami going after, like, Glenn Schumann? Because I heard him and Mario are close from their days at Alabama.
I don't have any leading candidates right now. I think it's wide open, and we have not heard of any leading candidate for defensive coordinator.
Okay. And when would you, if you had to, like, gun to your head, put a prediction, when would you think Manny would have his staff all wrapped up? By the Sun Bowl or by the middle of January?
You mean Mario? I would think he will try to do it by the end of the calendar year. So I'm expecting that to get a bulk of his focus the next couple of weeks when he's not going out to practice to watch the kids work out. I got to think he would like when they come back for the second semester in January to have everything in place, ready to roll.
Okay. And speaking of Manny, does Miami save money now that he's the defense?
Manny's not here anymore, man.
No, I'm asking, does the university save money by his buyout because he became defensive coordinator at Penn State?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, they might. They should. I'm not sure what his contract said, but typically what happens is whatever his salary is in his new job gets deducted from what he owes Miami, from what Miami owes.
Okay. And a couple other things. One, what do you think of the idea of this stadium with John Ruiz? I know he's a big big UM donor and has both his kids played baseball at UM, and one of them was drafted by the Astros, actually. Do you think there's any validity to the stadium talk?
I think there's validity in his mind, and he could certainly afford to do, or at least we think he could afford to do what he's talking about doing. But the only realistic scenario that makes sense to me is Tropical Park. I don't know where he came up with this Bird Road in Lejeune idea. There's been some scuttlebutt he might try to partner with the Moss Brothers at the location up by the airport. I don't know about those, but I think in his mind, he's not, he thinks he's serious.
Okay. And last thing, this Kevin, what do you know about this Kevin Coleman kid, and do we have a real shot with him, the wide receiver out of St. Louis?
Yes, I believe they have a very good shot.
So both him and Cyrus Moss, you think we have really good shots at?
I think a better shot. Probably, I would say with Coleman. I would say better shot with Coleman.
Okay. Well, thanks for taking my call, Gary. Have a great rest of the show.
All right, Adam, anytime. 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. Let's go out to the 706. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Hey, Gary, I made it up to number 3, man. That's pretty impressive. This is a boy, Sebastian.
What's up, Sebastian? How you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. A couple things I wanted to just ask you a couple questions on. The first one is you went through the recruiting class as far as surprises or anything. What would you consider, like, great success tomorrow? Like, is there one kid that if we landed tomorrow, you'd be like, man, that was, all things being equal, this was a pretty good signing day for us. What would that look like?
I mean, I'm not going to call it a pretty good signing day because it's very thin. I mean, it's an okay signing day. I think if you get Jaleel Skinner in the next few days and Nigel E. Kelly, that helps a lot. Those are two really good players.
Okay. All right. The second question I have for you is the kid I'm really looking for is the Marcus Banks kid because I think he'd be like a mid-year transfer. when we look at spring ball and we look at Tyreek Stevenson, you know, kind of banged up and looking at what the cornerback's going to look like from spring practice or whatnot, it'd be good to have like a more older guy.
Well, and Tyreek might, you know, looks like he's leaving unless he reverses course here, so.
Okay, well, I wasn't tracking that. I thought he was going to be coming back, but that
he should come back,
but
it doesn't look like he's headed in that down that route, you know.
Okay, no, that's the kid I'm really looking for, the Marcus Banks kid.
Yep.
Yeah, because I just think we need to have some sort of you know, defensive back is, you know, it's good when you're a talented true freshman, but that defensive backfield is all about communication and experience and stuff. And it'd be good to have a kid that's kind of played in that particular department. As far as the transfer portal, are there some, you know, we struck gold with Rambo. Are there any type of, like, number one receivers or players in the transfer portal that you think that, you know, be good that Miami would land maybe
honestly,
tomorrow?
Honestly, I have not studied the transfer portal to this point. I'm going to try to start doing so on Thursday and start to try to get a feel for who's in the portal and you know, who the better players are in the portal. So I can't answer that right now. We have been so busy with the current recruiting and obviously everything that was going on with the coaches and stuff that we have not really had a chance to pay much attention to the portal to this point.
Okay. Gary, have you heard anything as far as Lewis Headley? As far as, you know, we're not recruiting any kickers right now. Is there a chance he's going to be back? He's going to the NFL.
I'd be surprised if he comes back. I know he has the option. They do have another Australian kicker on the roster and another walk-on. I mean, so they're not in dire straits at punter. But I have not heard one way or the other if Headley has reconsidered coming back next year.
Okay. Just two more questions. Offensive line. If we lose Cardwell, that, correct me if I'm wrong, we're going to have zero. And what's the plan to kind of fix that, you know?
Well, I mean,
because we're losing a lot
next
of
cycle, I mean, you've got four offensive linemen still on the board that are going to sign in February. And
Who's that? Is that Agbo? Who's that?
No, there's a kid named Jackson Brown.
Okay.
And Mario wants him. Manny Diaz started the chase. Brown has he went to Cincinnati last weekend and is considering Cincinnati. He wants to visit Miami, and his dad is best friends with Jim Kelly, so that helps. So we're expecting that visit to take place in January, and we think that there's a shot there. The Josh Connerly kid from the Seattle area is a very, very highly regarded player. There's a player by the name of Dave Iuli. I mean, he committed to Cristobal at Oregon, and he's put off his signing until February. We know that Mario's been in contact with him since he came to Miami. And he's also been talking with Alex Mirabal, who's going to be Mario's offensive line coach. So we're thinking he'll visit in January also. And then lastly, there's a kid named Matthew McCoy. Miami was high up in his picture for a while when Garen Justice was recruiting him. The weekend before Manny Diaz was fired, he took an official visit to Miami and does have high interest in Miami. From what we've heard, Florida, Mississippi, and Maryland are also in his mix, so we'll see what happens. He can take another Miami visit in January because of the new head coach, and that's one to watch. If you see him take another Miami visit, then you know it's game on for the Canes.
Okay. Hey, the last thing I want to say is more of just observation. You know, I expect Miami to take off as far as productivity on the field and be like a real hot selling commodity. If we start racking up wins and competing at the highest level, whatnot. Are you and Matt thinking of expanding Canesport, Good Morning Canesport in the morning to like more like a daily, like syndicated show or something like that? Cause you guys
we will unquestionably continue Good Morning Canesport. There's no doubt about that. We are looking at all kinds of crazy things for 2022. And, you know, I can't talk about them all. Like, for contractual reasons, but I can tell you that 2022 will be a big year for Cane Sport in some way, shape, or form. And we are well aware of how excited everybody is, and we're well aware of how things are going to blow up in certain ways and things like that, from a recruiting standpoint and things like that. And we will be locked, armed, and loaded.
Okay, I appreciate it. Just keep it. Just keep up the good work, man. I appreciate that. Hey, man, keep me on hold, man. I don't want to see any disappointments tomorrow. That's all.
All right, Sebastian. Thanks, as always, for being part of the show. All right, now we're going to take a pause here. We're going to go to our Cane Sport managing editor, Matt Shodell, and he's going to take a break here for a few minutes. We got him. He's still talking to recruits tonight. We still got a lot of things that we're trying to run down, but I asked Matt to take a few minutes to come here and join us on Cane Sport Live. So, Matt, welcome to the jungle. That's what I'm going to call this show. It's usually the jungle. Tonight it's been a little mellow so far, but it's early. But, yeah, welcome back to Cane Sport Live.
Oh, long-time listener, first-time caller. Is this Gary Berman?
Well, it's not the friendly confines of Good Morning Cane Sport, I'll tell you that.
Hey, at least I can wear whatever I want. No collared shirt, no T-shirt, whatever I want to wear. This is great. I prefer the no video, honestly. I'm made for radio. I'm made for blah, for whatever this is called, a podcast. I don't know.
Yeah, me too, man. I'm sitting here chilling. I got a sweatshirt on. You know, yeah, we don't have to worry about what we're wearing or what, you know, how it looks or whatever. You're right. Hey, so I was saying earlier in the show, I was telling everybody that this is really weird. Okay, it's weird. I mean, we've been covering Miami recruiting for 30 years. I know you've been with us at Cane Sport for most of it. This is, like, unlike anything we've ever seen. I mean, there's not a ton going on. It's a very mellow, you don't want to, I mean, is it fair to say non-sensational? Or, it's a workman-like recruiting class. It's not going to be ranked very high. There's not going to be a whole lot of hoopla and buzz tomorrow. It's just pick up some decent players and then regroup for what'll be a blitz in the second period and the transfer portal. Would you agree with that?
I mean, the early signing period has really ruined signing day to a large extent, in my opinion. People used to take off the day from work, not sleep the night before. They'd be so nervous. But now it's like, if you miss on some guys in December, oh, that's fine. We'll get them in February. And you know what? If we don't get them in February, we'll get some transfer portal guys. Even if we get guys in December and guys in February, they might be transferring out in a year or two. It's like, it's changed so much. I feel bad for the people who used to live and die by signing day. You know, I remember we talked about it not that long ago. We used to do the Cyber Cane where we'd yell into the phone all the news.
the 900 lines, remember that?
People would call a 900 number and get the news, and they were so excited. And there was hundreds of people would call their 900 number. It would be like, I think you'd yell. I remember I'd be in my office on one side of the building. You'd be in your office. And I'd hear you yelling like, welcome to Cyber Cane. Here's your news from, you know, Wednesday, you know, January 30th or whatever. I mean, I remember it like it was yesterday, even though it was 30 years ago. But it's changed. It's remarkable how it's changed. And it's changed for the better for the recruits and for the kids, because they can lock themselves in earlier if they want to. It's changed for the worse for fans, because like you said, there's not a lot of drama. But guess what? There wasn't a lot of drama ever since they've instituted the early signing period. The commits tend to stick. And if they don't stick, well, the coaches have a chance, you know, 2 months later to grab someone else at that position. Nobody really freaks out about it anymore. And, yeah, it's great to get an Avante Williams on signing day, but it used to be there was 8 Avante Williams happening on both ways. You know, some we'd lose and some we'd get. And now it's like if you have 1 or 2 guys that are like, on the fence on signing day, you're all excited about it. It used to be, like, 8 people like that. So you could call it mellow, but this is the new normal to me.
So what are your thoughts? You know, I went through my thoughts on the class. What are your thoughts on the class?
I think it's fine. I don't think it's the greatest class of all time, but Mario he's had 10 days to put together this early signing period. It has the potential to be really good because, you know, you hang with Ja'Cory Brown at quarterback. I like that. If you get Kevin Coleman, which I think is a great chance at wide receiver, and you're gonna stick with Isaiah Horton. You're probably gonna lose Landon Ibieta, but that's 2 really good receivers. I like that. Receiver's not a huge position of need. I don't think they get Jahleel Skinner. If they get Jahleel Skinner, I mean, this would be a home run offensive class to me, even without the offensive lineman in the class, just from the skill talent position, because I'm not worried about the offensive line just because I know I know Mario Cristobal and I know Alex Mirabal. I am not worried about the offensive line. They'll either coach up the guys that are there or bring in portal guys or get guys in February. Like, I am not worried in the least about the offensive line anymore like I used to be. They will get that position right. I'm thinking they probably have to bring in a portal tight end at this point or a JUCO transfer kid. D-line, they're going to get Nigel Lee Kelly, I think, which is really good. Pretty good chance of Cyrus Moss. You know, you get those two guys and you add a February guy like Shamar, and that's really a heck of a defensive end ball, like probably as good as there is in the country, in my opinion. Linebacker, you get the Saints. I mean, they're going to have to bring in portal linebackers. The linebacker position, you can't help it right now with freshmen. It's not a position where freshmen are ready to come in and be impact players unless they're one of these, you know, 230-pound, five-star freshmen, and those don't grow on trees, and those are not in this class. So look for portal help at linebacker, which is fine. DBs, pretty good shot with Marcus Banks to help out immediately at cornerback, which is a major position of need. Chris Graves and Kamari are great prospects. To have them play major roles in year one is going to be tough, but you love getting them on board. You know, still have a chance with Jaden Harris. He's one I think I put him at 40%, 45% chance. You know, he's definitely alive. He'd be another great cornerback addition. You don't need safeties, but you get Marquise Williams. So that's fine. You got three really good young safeties already on the team, so he'll work into the mix. And then you move on to February, and February is going to be all about the offensive linemen. You know, you already mentioned, I heard you mention, like, the four guys that they're already on, and it'll be more than emerge that don't sign that they'll look at, and it'll be transfer portal guys, and they're already guys. There's a lot of guys on the team with talent that are coming back and young guys that might start emerging, you know. People forget Jalen Rivers was probably the best offensive lineman on the team before he got hurt. He'll be back. So I to me, it's not about, you ask how's the class. It's not about the class to me. It's about what they needed compared to what they already have on the team. They don't have a lot of spots open when you look at the 85 limit. I don't want to be long-winded here, but I think that they fit sort of the needs that they have roster-wise, and what they didn't fit, they can fit in February or in the portal. So I think it's fine. I think what they did is fine. And I'm a guy who's always a pessimist and always complaining. Those of you that watch Good Morning Kingsport know that. So for me to say that I'm happy with what they're doing, that means, like, you'd probably be thrilled, Gary. You'd be over the moon.
I'm always over the moon. But I think that there's more spots than meets the naked eye. I think that there's going to be a lot of movement on this roster. I think that the players on the team are going to get a very close examination from the new coaching staff and the new head coach. And I don't think Mario's not the kind of guy that's going to hesitate to bring a lot of new faces into the program. And he's not going to be afraid to tell guys that he doesn't think that they have a future in the program. So I think there's more spots to meet the eye. I don't know what that number ends up being. Obviously, it's not going to be real big tomorrow, but when you put it all together, what happens tomorrow with the late signing period and then the transfer portal, I wouldn't be surprised, Matt, if they end up somewhere close to that 25 number of players coming in this year.
Well, then they got to jettison 10 guys on the current roster, which is possible.
And I think that could happen.
Yeah, it could. And if it does, I think it's because they're going to get a lot of portal guys. I don't think they're going to get 25 high-level recruits. I mean, they're going to get what they're going to get tomorrow, maybe hitting 12 or 13. You know, you're not going to get another 12 or 13 high-level February signees. It just doesn't happen. There's a few out there. There's probably 3 to 4 guys I think that they could probably get that are very high quality in February. I don't want to see them reaching for Plan B and Plan C guys in February when they have a full year. Because, like what you're saying, Gary, it makes sense to you, and it makes sense to a lot of people listening. But what maybe you're not looking at is right now, this is for next year, okay? For next year, without the incoming class, there's 20 players who are going to be qualified as redshirt freshmen, okay? 20 redshirt freshmen. So if you're talking about adding 25 more true freshmen, you're clogging up all that work.
I included transfers in there. I didn't say it'd be true.
So how many? Okay. Okay. So So now I do agree with you more on that. I thought you were talking more about the signing classes in January and February combined. Yeah. So look, the less freshmen they bring in, the better, because they're stacked right now at redshirt freshmen and sophomores. And you want to bring in juniors and seniors because those are free scholarships to me, in the sense that those guys, when they become seniors and leave, that's your next wave of 25 that you can sign. And right now they have so many young players. And, yeah, those young players are great, but it's really going to hamper what Mari wants to do in terms of recruiting. And he's such a good recruiter, and he wants to reshape the roster. But it's very hard to reshape a roster when you only have five juniors on offense and four seniors on offense. I mean, those guys over the next two cycles, over the next 2 years, that means you have basically nine guys over 2 years on offense to replace. Or you got to kill redshirt freshmen and sophomores on the team and say goodbye to young guys who, you know, maybe haven't reached their potential, but, like, can you give up on them that early? I don't know. Move to defense. You got six juniors and three seniors on defense this coming year. Next year, I'm talking about, not from this year, next year, as of right now on the roster. That's only nine spots over the next 2 years to fill with defensive players in the portal and recruiting combined, unless you jettison freshmen and sophomores, which is why I'm saying to you, don't reach for
plan
B and plan C.
They might have to jettison some. Like, you know, I hope his parents aren't
listening. Who are you
going to
jettison?
I'll go down the roster.
Elijah Roberts, maybe. There's a few of them.
Wait, who did you say?
I mean, look, the redshirt freshman, you just don't know. Like, you could say Tyler Duncan on Tariq Austin Case because they haven't done anything, but they're just entering year two. Like, you can't give up on those guys and kick them out of the program. And then who do you get rid of on defense, you know? I mean, Malik Curtis looked okay. James Williams, obviously, no. You know, I'm just running the list. Like, maybe Isaiah Dunson, but he's got a bright future. Brian Ballum, same thing. Chase Smith's going to be good. Corey Flagg is okay. Sam Brooks, maybe, but when he's healthy, he's good. Avery Huff doesn't get it, but he's a great athlete. You can maybe get rid of Elijah Roberts, but he did some great things. Chance Williams,
Elijah
looks fine.
Jared Hunt,
I'm going down the whole list. Jared Hunt, you keep. Jafari Harvey, keep. Leonard Taylor, you keep. That's all their sophomores. You don't get rid of any of them. So, like, where's the fat you're going to trim in the freshmen and sophomores? There just isn't. And he's going to have to be very creative with the numbers he's taking for juniors and senior transfers, because those, when you bring them in, like you said, there's 15 open spots. To me, don't take so many freshmen. Take junior and senior, transfers, JUCO kids, whatever you want to call them. And those are free scholarships, because when you replace those guys, you replace them with freshmen, and that's how you balance your class right now. And I'm sure Mario knows that. So I expect them to be very heavy in the portal, not go plan B and plan C and freshmen in February.
I would look at the line of scrimmage for starters, okay? I would look at a guy like Alan Hay. I don't think has any chance to ever play here. I think Thomas Davis came in very small and light. And, you know, he's the guy that I don't know if he'll ever catch up. That's two guys right there on the defensive line that I would certainly include on the list.
I mean, those guys, like, just got, you know, I don't hate, like,
you know,
just got,
yeah,
you know,
I understand,
like, you know, that's
but,
a little rough.
But if they're not supposed to,
you're
going to
kill yourself.
Been...
You jettison that kid, you kill yourself at Chaminade. I just look. It's going to be very. It's a very slippery slope.
I'm just throwing out
names
of guys that I wonder whether they'll ever play.
I understand.
You know,
it's going to be very interesting to see what he does. That's for sure.
I think you got some linebackers that have very little, you know, chance to play. You know, I mean, maybe I'm reaching because they're so young, but. You know, I don't know how well thought of Johnson or Troutman were this past year.
Troutman's tiny, but he can play. And Tyler played a little bit at the end. He's Shaquan's brother. He's going to grow into a pretty good player, I think. But you're right. They have to make decisions. They don't have – like, if they're going to get top-tier guys in the next two classes, they're not going to have a choice. They're going to have to get rid of players who might turn out to be really, really good. And, like, that's just a risk you take, you know, because they're just overloaded right now with freshmen and sophomores. Like, there's too many guys in those two classes right now because of the COVID numbers to compete with each other. Some of them are going to probably want to leave anyway, because when they're in backups as juniors,
yeah, I mean,
they're going to, you know, say, hey, I'm behind somebody, I'm not going to play. They'll leave on their own. But, like, to jettison them right now for this year, I don't see it happening necessarily with a lot of them, except maybe some offensive linemen.
I mean, the roster has to get better. I mean, I don't, you know, I think some of these guys on the offensive line that are way down the depth chart.
I think the offensive guys will get rid of. I get rid of maybe tight end. I know is a horrible numbers-wise, but like Mamorelli and Hodges, I got no problem getting rid of either of those guys just because of their, you know, Mamorelli has looked good, but injury-prone, and Hodges with his personal problems. And then the O-line, you know, El Gamel, I could see going.
Yeah.
John Campbell,
Brantley.
Even I could see going. And certainly Cleveland Reed and maybe even a Traore. There's offensive line numbers you can get rid of and maybe replace them with defensive numbers if you needed to. You know, generally you want to keep your offensive numbers pretty even, because right now they have 34 offensive players and 33 defensive players coming back for next year. And that's a good balance. But they may not have a choice but to take some of these offensive linemen off the team and replace them with defensive guys until they sort of know what they have with the younger defensive players, you know.
Yeah, there's probably a half dozen guys that would very easily be candidates to not be invited back, I would think. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I hate to speculate like that because,
yeah,
you know, everybody's – I know a lot of kids' moms listen to the show and stuff, and, you know, I don't want to hurt feelings and make them feel bad and, oh, my God, they were saying my son can't play, that kind of thing. But I would think there's about a half dozen guys that might be candidates for that.
Yeah.
All right, Matt. So taking a look at the February list, I don't know if you have it in front of you right now, but who, if you do have it in front of you, who, obviously
yeah.
Shamar Stewart and Ahmad Moten figure to get hard, hard looks. Maybe Jaleel Florence is another one that'll get recruited real, real hard. Is there anybody else that really jumps out to you on that February list?
Well, you don't want to get that February list up in front of me. Hold on a sec. Let's see here. The ones in February that I would, you know, think they would like to take, you know, the kid who you can't pronounce his last name from Dave Uli, who was committed to him at Oregon. I think there's a really good chance with him. You know, I was texting with him today and I haven't called him yet. We've been so tied up with just, you know, I mean, if you guys look at the front page today, I mean, we've been writing stories nonstop all day, just tracking down coaches and signing day times and trying to figure out what the hell is going on and talking to sources and this and that. So I've been texting with Dave, and it sounds like he is really interested in Miami, and he's going to visit and in January. And he did commit to Cristobal. He loves Mirabal. So, you know, he said he's talking with Mirabal all the time, and he's getting texts from Cristobal all the time. So I think that would be a great take for Miami. You know, offensive guard, a really good interior guy. I mean, I could see him playing really early here. So that would be great. You know, the other offensive linemen, like, I don't know, I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other on the other three that you mentioned, Brown, Connerly, and McCoy. Defensive line, I think they got to try to get Moten and Stewart. I think they will get Moten. As for Stewart, man, I mean, I would love to say they're going to get Stewart. Like, it makes sense to me they would get Stewart. You know, they're making these changes. But the key there is going to really be what happens for the defensive line coach and what happens with the defensive coordinator. And I've talked with Shamar several times, and he doesn't do that many interviews, but I have talked to him several times. And I've been talking to a source really close to Shamar, and you could call him a mentor, I guess. And, like, what I'm hearing consistently from them is they're trying not to pick a coach and trying to just pick a school. But to me, like, how can you not look at who's coaching you at the time, especially on a new staff where you know the guy's going to be there for a while? You know, that's really the benefit. That's why you really get a bounce usually from having a new coaching staff is, you know, the kids know, hey, this guy's going to be around for at least 3 or 4 years. You know, he's just starting out to build the program and I can be a part of it. And I'm his guy and not some prior, you know, coaching staff's guy. So that's really where you get that bounce. And that's why it's almost a shame that Mario only had 10 days and really was very little help from assistant coaches to get this thing going. It was just bad timing. But with Shamar, you know, they'll have all of January to work him.
Yeah.
What's that?
I agree. I think it helps Miami the longer it goes. You know, I don't think it hurts them.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, Shamar, look, right, it's signing day with Shamar, goes to Texas A&M. But
yep.
I see Miami winning out for sure. He's got a lot of friends on the team. That's gonna be a huge one. And then at cornerback, they definitely need some more help.
One thing I want to throw out on Shamar while you're on that one. Keep an eye on Mario's staff, because if he can get James Coley on this staff, then Coley's been recruiting Shamar to Texas A&M. I think that would even more so increase Miami's chances of getting Shamar Stewart.
Oh, no, if they get Coley, I would argue that would actually seal the deal for Miami. I mean, I think that's a big reason he's so hot to trot on, maybe I shouldn't say, I don't know if that's an old saying, Texas, you know, it's Texas A&M. But yeah, I mean, again, we got to just wait and see. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they fill out the staff. I know Mario loves great recruiters, and James Coley's a great recruiter, so it would be a great fit. But, yeah, that's going to be a really, really interesting battle to see what happens with Shamar.
All right, Matt. Well, we will let you get back on the phones and keep tracking guys down. Thanks for coming on here for a little bit on Canesport Live.
All right. Thanks for not making me be on video. I can just sit here and talk on the phone like a normal person.
Yeah, you get the night off from video. No good morning.
I'll take that.
No good morning came for tonight. All right. Matt Schodel.
Good luck Matt, rest of your show.
You got it. Matt Schodel, everybody. Yeah, so a lot of interesting stuff here. But, again, this is not your typical signing day tomorrow. And normally we've got drama and intrigue and not a ton of that this year. All right, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. Let's go out to the 305. You're live on Canesport Live.
Hey, how you doing, Gary?
Hey, what's up, Shmira? How you doing this week?
Ah, you know what? For the first time I could talk to you in the last, maybe 6 or 7 years, I'm actually in really, really good spirits. This is a rough year for me with
Yeah.
I mean, I ragged on this whole football program basically from the start of the season since I was in Georgia for the Alabama game, and I knew that this needed to be changed. So I'm just, for the first time, just really excited about you. And, you know, I just heard you talking to Matt about stuff. You know, for the first time, we have a coach that I could say he will figure it out and he will get the best guys and the best players and get off the guys he doesn't want that don't fit his program. But we know that he is the guy for the job. So it's just,
yep,
you know, a positive to know that we're in good hands with Mario. I can tell you that.
Yep, no doubt.
You know, I wanted just to bring up a few things. I know that it's mostly a recruiting show tonight, but, you know, obviously we can only talk about the same guys so many times.
Yeah, no, you know,
there's a few.
You can certainly bring up other stuff.
Yeah, there's a few things that just, you know, boggle my mind. It's a little bit that I've been seeing on, obviously, the last week or so on Twitter and social media was a little crazy with Mario, so happy to get that out of the way. But just these guys, when I hear about building this stadium and all this stuff going on, I mean, I think it doesn't even make sense. I mean, let's just get over the fact that the Orange Bowl is gone. You know, it was the best place ever. We've moved on from that. There's not going to be another Orange Bowl. But Miami plays currently in Hard Rock Stadium, which is the Rolls Royce of stadiums. And it's proven that when you have a good game and you can get people in the stadium, it's a pretty good atmosphere, you know, i.e. the Notre Dame game. Why in the world would you want to build a 50,000-seat stadium closer to Coral Gables? Who cares? There's maybe 8,000 undergrad kids at UM. So who even cares about that? Why would? And it's not going to compare to Hard Rock Stadium. So why would you even want to do that? I don't think it's even possible, and who would even want it? But I'm just saying, I don't even understand the argument. It's just something that just doesn't click with me, and maybe I'm wrong, but do you agree with me?
I'm kind of like in the middle. I see the value of a stadium, but the thing is, like, it can't be a crappy stadium. Like, you know, like, you know, I obviously travel the country and go to a lot of these stadiums. I mean, they're not anywhere close to Hard Rock.
But why would you have a really good place?
Well, yeah, I mean, at Hard Rock, you got great tailgating when they're not building a damn Formula One racetrack out in the parking lot, which obviously won't be the case after this year. You got great luxury suites and club areas and things like that, way nicer than most college stadiums. I mean, you'd probably have to spend at least $500 million to build a decent college stadium. And, you know, so I'm kind of like in the middle on this thing. I mean, if they are going to ever build one, I think Tropical Park is the right location, and it's got to be a really nice stadium.
And it's not going to compare to Hard Rock. So I don't even understand the argument. But
no, Hard Rock's almost a billion-dollar stadium now.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, no.
I mean,
no,
we both
no, yeah.
right. We both know they're never going to build one. I mean, this is, but and let's just say this is a 0% chance this will ever happen. They will never build one on campus. So if you're not on campus, why not be? What's the difference? If you know, 20 minutes away, whatever it is, or 40 minutes to the Hard Rock, what's the difference? I mean, I just don't understand the argument. But whatever, that's for another
well,
day.
This is one guy. It's one guy, Shmira, who's stepping up and saying, "I want to do this."
That Ruiz guy,
and
yeah, and
it may be reality. It might not. You know.
But why would
it
even want to be reality? Would you even be that happy if they were building a 50,000 person stadium and in a, you know, tropical park, whatever. I wouldn't be that enthused about that. It's not going to be the Orange Bowl, so who cares? But whatever.
Right.
Let's just be happy with when it happens. And then the other two things, you know, just kind of just a little strange. I think that really need to, the NCAA really needs to kind of step in and kind of prevent this from getting a little crazy, is the NIL deals are just a little, I think obviously, you know, when, like everything, they are meant for the higher echelon players, you know, the QBs and stuff that command these big contracts because they're going to be Heisman Trophy winners. But now you just see these things where, you know, package deals where everyone's getting, you know, $5,000 or $500, whatever it may be, and just really not for what it's intended for. And I really think the NCAA needs to kind of get the grips on that before it gets a little too out of control. It's just, I see it already going that way, and I don't really, I'm not too versed in it, but I could just, I don't know. I just think that they really need to get their hands on that.
I like the NIL. I think it's good. I think the problem is the kids need to be taught to honor their deals. Like, you know, that's where the problems come up, is when it's when they sign contracts and they don't fulfill what they're supposed to fulfill as part of the contracts, because they think it's all a joke. Like, they don't, you know, they think it's an excuse to give them money. I'm not going to name the names or whatever. We did NIL deals with five different players. I would say four of the five were really, really good in terms of honoring the deals. There was one that's not real, hasn't been really good. But like the whole team got a deal with American Top Team Dan Lambert, and there was some conjecture this week that maybe the NCAA might be investigating it or something. Listen, I was involved with Dan Lambert in getting that organized. I saw the contracts. The contract was written by a top flight attorney who was very involved in NIL and knew what he was doing. Those contracts are great contracts. There's not going to be an issue there. Dan Lambert hired somebody, Shmira, to oversee the program, get the contracts done, and make sure the players honored the contracts. Now, from what I understand, supposedly that took place. Did it take place 100%? Total top to bottom entire roster? I'm guessing probably not. And, you know, the onus is on the players to understand that if they sign a contract and start taking money, they need to honor the contracts. And that is Manny Diaz's fault, because I don't think that tone was ever set this year. I don't know that these players were taught that when you sign a contract, you have to honor it, things like that. Because I saw a little bit of the other direction on that. So I think that it's an education process. This was the first year. I'm sure there were hiccups, but I personally don't have a problem with the NIL. I think it's good for the kids to have some extra money in their pockets.
Yeah. I mean, and just what, you know, I think Greg mentioned this earlier. I think there was reports out there, and like I said, we don't know if they got the money or not, but you did see Texas get two huge recruits, and I believe they're going to get another one tomorrow. But something with the offensive lineman, they were going to get $50,000 basically just to put their pen to paper and be on the offensive line at Texas. I mean, I did see that there is some, you know, I don't know, but I mean, that's not what this is for. This is for Heisman Trophy, you know, that, you know, players, you know, the big quarterbacks to try to, you know, get their likeness and to get paid for it, not for these, you know, crazy loopholes that get these players, you know, I don't know. I just don't like it. And, you know, we could discuss this another time.
I think you're going to see Tyler Van Dyke get a big NIL deal. I think
he deserves it. He could be a Heisman Trophy winner, though. I mean, I'm not saying – by the way, I think they're hyping him up a little too much, but, you know, it seems like a really good kid, so I hope he takes it and just runs with it and gets better. But he deserves it. That's – you're talking about a Heisman – you know, he'll be on the list of a top five Heisman guy next year. That's what it's for, not for, you know, I don't know, name some random linebacker on the team to get random money, you know. I don't know.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, it's not a problem for kids. For, you know, those kids are getting, like, say, $500 a month from American
right.
Top Team that wanted to support the whole roster. I mean, I could see why the NCAA's antenna went up on that, but it's good for those kids to have that money.
Right. And then just my last little point I want to make, and I also think that this whole portal thing is getting a little out of control, and you're going to start seeing a lot. It's going to eventually start affecting high school kids that aren't going to get the scholarships. And I think a lot of these guys, I think, are not going to find places that are going to want them. So, I mean, I think that's going to eventually, you know, tone down a little, because right now it's free agency. And who want? I mean, you know, these coaches spend years recruiting these kids, and all of a sudden they jump in the portal a year later. I think that's you're quitting on your team for the most part because you're not starting. You know, what is that? I think that's not what college, what it was really intended for. You know, I like the rules before that. As a grad transfer, you could leave. And then I think you should have to sit out a year if you're going to, you know, you're not honoring your contract, basically. You're getting, and I think everything, like in today's days, are just giving kids an easy way out of things, and I don't think that's what it should be. But yeah, you know, I guess that could be debated. But all right, but like I said, all is well, and I'm so excited for next year. I already got renewed my season tickets and everything, and I'm just excited for the future here.
All right, Shmyro, thank you for being part of the show.
You got it, Gary.
We'll talk to you next time. Yeah. All right, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. At some point here in the 9 o'clock hour, we're going to be joined by Mr. Larry Bluestein, the guru of South Florida high schools, and we'll talk a little bit recruiting with Larry and get his thoughts on what's going on down at the U in that regard. But right now, let's go to the 917. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Hey, Gary, what's up, BK Hurricane?
What's up, BK? How you doing this week?
What's going on, man? I'm just hanging in there. Listen, quick question, like on the NIL, right?
Yep.
Do you think at some point they'll have to develop like a cap? Because these numbers will really start getting out of hand, and it will start to give, you know, certain teams an unfair advantage. Like, okay, Texas gives me – I'm just throwing out numbers. Texas gives me $150,000, and Alabama says, well, listen, kid, come here. We'll give you $200,000.
Yep. I don't think you're wrong. I think that's already happening. I just don't see how you could set a cap. I think that would be open whoever was trying to set that cap up to lawsuits. I mean, how do you restrict what somebody's able to make? If Kid A is able to make $1 million, what do you think? You didn't tell him the cap's $100,000? I mean, you can't really do that, you know?
Well, let's just say, you know, like this whole thing is stemming from NIL, right? Name, image, and likeness, right? So,
yep.
So at some point, like you said, you know, the kids have to prove, you know, at some point they have to be held to that contract. Like you said, some of them, you know, slide under cracks, and some of them, you know, just pretty much took the money and didn't have any responsibility to hold up to the contract, right? Mm-hmm. But there has to be some kind of governing body that tracks these things, you know, because if professional athletes, if professional teams, like so to say, have a salary cap, so to say, there should be an NIL cap. There was a cap in regards to how much a college, like, you know, before NIL, how much a college could give to a kid just for basic everyday living. What was that, like $50? I don't know what the number was, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, before this thing gets out of hand, it's like there has to be some form of cap.
I just, like I said, I don't see how they could legally do it. I don't see how they would legally do it. I really don't.
Well, you know, I mean, it's bad enough that, you know, like the market is already set for college coaches. Half of them are getting paid more than NFL coaches, which may be pretty good because it gives them no incentive to go to the NFL unless they have a dream of winning the Super Bowl. But no more leaving college to the NFL for the money, you know?
Yes.
You know, they're getting paid enough in you know, 2 years, and you're Mel Tucker, and you're getting, what is he getting, $9 million a year, $10 million, whatever the number is, a ridiculous number. He hasn't even proven himself as a coach yet.
Right. Yeah, that was irresponsibility by Michigan State. It really was, because it created a new salary scale for coaches around the country, and like
that's
in
what
some
they
cases,
did. They set the market.
Yeah, like Mario Cristobal probably would have been a $6 million coach before the Mel Tucker deal. He became an $8 million coach, and that's really what it did across the board. It drove up salaries, you know. great for the coaches.
And that price, yeah, it's great for the coaches. Never going down. They're just going to have a lot of college teams with a lot of average coaches making $10 million, $8, $9, $10 million a year. Didn't Florida State just give Mike Norvell an extension?
I'm not sure. I didn't
they
see
gave
that.
Him an extension. Yeah, an did extension. They? I think he got an extension today. I was like, what for? What? What did he do?
Mm-hmm.
So, man, this whole thing is getting out of hand. But, you know, like the recruiting thing, I'm just waiting. You know, I'm really not pressed for it. I'm really not pressed because, you know, I wasn't expecting much in regards to signing day. I'm more looking forward towards the transfer portal. And hopefully, you know, they could evaluate some good kids that's in the transfer portal and pick some of them up. Oh, but last question, though. I'm not sure if you noticed. How is Georgia keeping all them five stars, keeping them from transferring? And they're not even seeing the field. I mean, they're stacking five-star DBs every for the last 4 years, and they're just sitting on the bench.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how they get those kids to stay. I mean, Tyreek didn't stay. I don't know. I don't know. Can't answer that one.
I mean, I was looking at their roster. I'm like, holy shit, how are these guys not hitting the transfer portal? Except for Tyreek. He was the only one that said, you know, I think with Tyreek, it was more the fact that he wanted to come home. But, geez, these other guys, my goodness gracious. But that's it, Gary. That's all I have. Keep me on.
All right, man. You got it. Thanks, as always, for being part of the show. All right. I believe that Larry Bluestein's on the line, so I'm going to go find him here in the queue. There he is, and let's bring him on that right now. The guru of South Florida and Florida high school football, and a guy that also follows his share of recruiting, and that's Larry Bluestein, who we always like to have on our show at least once a year, right before signing day. Larry, welcome back to Cane Sport Live.
Hey,
how you doing tonight?
Thanks, Gary. I appreciate it.
Huh? Are you washing dishes there or something? There's a little crackle on your phone.
No, that was I'm not watching that. I'm trying to take it on so I can get off our speaker, and now we're okay. Now you hear me better?
Yeah, that's good. So Larry, first of all, how are you? Obviously, you know, high school football is coming to crescendo this week with the state championship games down here.
Yes.
You know, your thoughts just on the high school football season in general, I guess.
Productive, you know, for a lot of kids. Still, because of, you know, COVID, we had a lot of kids that, you know, for one reason or another, the games were canceled and a couple of them weren't made up. And, you know, nowadays you're living off a point system. And every game you play and every opponent that you have is based on a point system. And that's why a team like St. Thomas Aquinas, when Plantation said they had COVID and couldn't play St. Thomas that week, St. Thomas had to scramble around, and that was their only loss. They lost to the number one team in the state, and Tampa Jesuit, with Todd Bowles' son, who's a heck of a linebacker. It's been really, really a good year as far as that. You know, kind of uncertain South Florida-wise as far as colleges, because you have two new coaches in town, and you know, a lot of these kids, you know, were in line for Miami before, you know, we'll take a step back and see what's going on. And obviously they're still in the mix. And I think Miami over the next, you know, it's not what they're going to do this year. I think it's what they're going to do over the next couple of years that are going to pretty much wow a lot of people. Because, but I still think because Mario Cristobal is such a, you know, a great salesman when it comes to any program. You know, I usually call it paycheck loyalty, which is good because you have to, you know, wherever your paycheck's coming from, you have to do real well. But in this case, it's not only paycheck loyalty, but it's his alma mater. And he wants, because he's seen in the past what happens when you take over, you know, your own program, you know, for the school that you played for, the classes that you attended. And, you know, here's a guy that has 2 degrees from the University of Miami, and obviously he saw with Randy Shannon, and he saw, you know, had an opportunity to, you know, see what Mark Richt went through, and he knows it's not easy. And but at the same time, he's got to be him, and if he's him, he's going to be lethal.
Larry, this is the quietest signing day I think I've ever seen at Miami, and really in South Florida in general. Tomorrow, I'm looking at, you know, we were looking at the schedule and thinking about where we're going to go. And, you know, I think I'm going to start out the morning at Miami Central and go see Wesley Bissain sign. And, you know, then there'll be about a three and a half hour lull there, and going to pop up to, I guess, Dillard and see Nigel E. Kelly sign. But there's not a whole lot else, Larry. I've never seen anything like this. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about that.
Sure.
Is South Florida high school football as good and as deep as you and I have known it for our whole lifetime?
Yeah, it still is. But you have a couple of factors playing around, and one of them's the portal. And that right now is kind of backlogged a lot of things where, you know, in the past, these kids would have been signing, you know, tomorrow. But right now you're finding a lot of colleges who are maybe waiting on the portal, and they've got these guys, Gary. I watched it, how a lot of these schools have hired people to go into the portal and dissect everybody that's in the portal and have like a running database, because, you know, let's face it, and I've said this often, that's now everything's changed. I mean, you know, and then we could credit obviously the pandemic for a great deal of it, but you know what, the very fact still going to remain that now everybody likes, you know, I think they like, there's people who like the portal. I think college coaches like it a lot more than high school coaches, because now high school coaches are finding it tougher to sell their kid. But college coaches, you know what? And I've often said this in some parallel crazy way, Bill Snyder of Kansas State was a genius ahead of his time, because didn't he have his own built-in transfer portal, Gary? He had a junior colleges. And that's what it was. And I kept saying, you know, and everybody criticized them. And every year they kept, you know, oh, how could you have 17 guys? And he had, and he won. And, you know, we had guys like Klein and those type of guys that went on to the NFL. I'm just saying, you know, that's going to be the wave of the future. It's just because kids get disgruntled. But I think there has to be, just like the name, image, and likeness, I think there has to be guidelines. You see, they all jumped in head first to this, you know, and nobody likes the NCAA because they, you know, they're an authoritative figure. But at the same time, you need some of that. You need structure. You need structure. I mean, every college athlete, male and female, deserve to get compensated for what they do, and I'm never going to go against that. But at the same time, there's got to be limits. I mean, geez, you know, Bryce Young may not even want to go to the NFL. What the heck? You know, geez, he's making more, going to be making more at Alabama than he's going to be making, you know, in a rookie contract. So, yeah, they got to kind of step back, and everybody, you know, this is just us against them type of mentality, and it's kind of crushed recruiting. It really has, because you know me, Gary, I see a billion kids, but now I'm finding that I'm probably working harder to get these kids, you know, in front of people. And, you know, and everybody goes, well, mine has only got, you know, 6-7 scholarships so far, whatever the number may be. But the whole thing is, you know, Mario Cristobal, by sometime around February, is going to have a lot of kids. And they're going to be quality kids. It's not going to be a bunch of bulk. It's going to be good kids. You know, heard the name early on in the conversations, Justin Flo, but I haven't heard that name since.
Yeah, we spoke to his dad. His dad told us he's more than likely to stay out on the West Coast. But there are others that will factor in with Mario. There's no doubt about it. There will be kids in Oregon that want to come here. There's going to be February signees that are going to want to come here.
Well,
but
and they're not alone.
I was just going to say, the thing that's weird is just not too many of them are from South Florida. You know, I saw a stat today. There's I think 13 Florida kids in the top 100 recruits this year, and at least 11 or 12 of the 13 are going to leave the state of Florida and go to school outside the state. And, right. You know, it's just really, really weird what is going on right now, not just in South Florida, but really, you know, the whole state. And I think it just seems like there's a shortage of blue chip players in Dade and Broward County this year. Like there's just not a ton of the usual quality we would see. So the question I would ask you, Larry, is how does it look for the next cycle and the one after that? How are the next
yeah.
2 years shaping up in South Florida?
Really good. I mean, you got, like you mentioned, Bain is going to be elite, top echelon type of kid. Certainly Brandon Innes from American Heritage Plantation, top-notch wide receiver who decommitted from Oklahoma. This, you have perhaps more wide receiver talent in the state of Florida next year than they've had in 10 to 12 years. Such elite. Uh-huh. I mean, you have 10 to 15 elite type of kids. And, it looks really good. But I wouldn't discount, you know, you say there's not that much talent now, you know, for this cycle. And there were. I mean, you got the Earl Littles and you got all those kids like that and the Kenyatta Jacksons and players of that nature who were upper, you know, Ohio State, Alabama type guys. The whole thing is they're not going to Miami. Now, they could have easily gone to Miami, but Gary, you've been around us for a long time, and I could rattle off a trillion names, and I saw one of them tonight, Marvin Jones Sr., you know, that could have easily gone to Miami, but he didn't, and Derek Thomas could have easily gone to Miami, and he didn't, and Steve Hutchinson, and on and on and on, and it's been like that forever. It's just now what's happening is being magnified. And I think you're going to see less magnification now because you have somebody who is one of the better recruiters and the better closers around in Mario Cristobal. And then you've got, he is going to get a staff. And I always tell people like this, and this is what the kid Jacquerie Burns said. And in one of his interviews, he says, yo, I'm going to Miami because I loved it before and all they're going to do is upgrade it. And that's what everybody is really feeling right now, that with Mario Cristobal, everybody that he brings in, Gary, is going to be somebody that is going to be a work ethic crazy man like him, is going to be able to understand where he be on the same page. And that's why, you know, I'm sure he's talking to trillions of them as he's going to recruiting trips. He's on the phone constantly with guys, and they could be great fits. And, you know, you got to see what their contracts are, and you got to see, you know, different things like that, you know. And now that he's given more of a green light to get top flight coordinators, he's going to do so. And Miami's got the money now to bring in those top flight coordinators, and then you start building around there. So the cheap days are over, and now there's no more excuses because everybody now is going to be a transparent type of thing, and that's the one thing about Mario Cristobal that I've known since he was 15 years old, that he'll never lie to you. He'll always tell you if, either way, you know. So, and that's good, and that's a great thing because, you know, I dealt and you dealt with plenty of coaches that just BS you to death and just to try to get you pacified. And Mario won't do that. And I'm excited about that.
All right, let me ask you about a couple of these kids. Nigel E. Kelly started out looking like he was going to go to Florida State. Then it started looking like he was liking Miami a little bit. He had a heavy flirtation with Mario Cristobal when he was out at Oregon. Now Mario comes back here, and Nigel E. He's going to jump into the Miami boat tomorrow. Your thoughts on Nigel E. Kelly, the player?
Difference maker, right away. And you know what? Here's the best indication. And we were at the Dillard game this year against St. Thomas Aquinas, and one of the writers, John Santucci, and I were, you know, watching this game, watching Nigel E., and all of a sudden he got rolled up on. And he came out, and Gary, for those 9 plays, St. Thomas Aquinas dominated, okay? And then all of a sudden he comes back in, and then the game went back to where it was. That shows you. He's a difference maker. Big, strong, agile type of kid. Great, got a tremendous motor. Yeah, he's one of those musts.
All right, and another guy that would seemingly fall in that category would be Wesley Bethune, the linebacker from Miami Central. Your thoughts on him? He's committed to Miami. We think he's going to stick tomorrow.
Yeah, he's going to stick. And first time I met Wes was in the gym at Miami Central High School, and he was a ninth grader, and he took a basketball and didn't even move, and he jumped straight up and dunked it.
Wow.
Ninth grade. And I'm thinking, huh? 2 minutes later, Coach gets him out. Coach Roland Smith grabs him out. He says, let's go. And I watched him play football. And the one thing I've known since he was a 10th grade, he goes sideline to sideline. He's got quickness. He's got a frame where you could put 30 pounds on him easily, easily. Get his butt in the weight room. By the time he's a junior, end of junior year in college, he's on everybody's list in the NFL.
And I think the strength program at Miami, I mean, David Feely has been believed to be doing a decent job, but I think it's going to go up even in a whole nother notch to a whole nother level when this guy Aaron Feld comes into the building. And I think we're going to see kids like Wesley Bethune get developed better,
yep.
Maybe than kids like that have been developed in the program in the past. I mean, we look at the linebackers on the roster right now. We're not seeing a ton of development there. And,
no.
You know, maybe that's something that starts getting a lot better in the Miami program. Larry, I don't know how much you've gotten to see of Chris Graves, the defensive
yes.
back mitt. I think he's going to stick in the class. It looks that way right now. What are your thoughts on Chris Graves?
Just a solidly athletic kid. I went to last year when we went to – 2 years ago, went over to Bishop Thoreau and watched the other young man that came to Miami. And we're watching – Both of them play, and I'm thinking, ooh, this kid may be a little bit better. He's got great hips in the secondary. He can throw. He even threw a couple of balls. I said, wow, he's pretty athletic. And, yeah, I like him a lot. I like him a lot, and because he's a proven guy. I've got a chance to watch him. And, you know, and the one thing, too, Gary, and I think people – I want people to understand that while, you know, the other coaching staff, and I'll never – say a bad word what they did. They did what they did. But I will tell you this. The one thing about what Mario's going to do and what we haven't had here in a long time is take those Wesley Bethune, take those top-ranked kids and bring them up to their potential. And we've had nobody to teach these kids. We've had nobody to reach down and, you know, reach every fiber in their body to bring out that five-star, that four-star, and you've got it now. You've got people that will work you to your strengths, and that's something that I think people don't understand. I don't think the average fan realizes, you know, Miami's had this talent, but development has been crazily bad. You know, I mean, but now it's going to improve, and I know that for a fact it will improve. Because I know the product, I know the people, I know him, I know the people that he's going to bring here, and it's going to improve. And that's why Miami's going to be a much, much better team, taking nothing away from Manny Diaz or what Lashley did. Because like I said, you know, without Manny Diaz, we don't have one of the best quarterbacks in the country. And, you know, and that's just the way it is. I mean, it's just, you know, he's done some really good things, and now we move on. And I told you, the one thing about Mario, he's blind. He's got blinders on, and that's the way you want your head coach to be. And he's got no, like he said, I got to let the boys do their thing, you know, out there, and let's win that Sun Bowl, and I'm going to take care of my business. And that's,
right.
See, that's the way you like, because you know what? He's not – if he wasn't thinking about his own school, he'd go, ah, the hell of it. I'll just take it over, you know, like that. And no, he wants what's best for the kids, and what's best for the kids is what they have now, and they've got the best chance to win the game and against Washington State. And that's the thing, Gary. That's it's so important to have a guy who everybody kind of like stops and focuses on the things that he does, not just so much as – you know, this or that, and oh, I'm going to wait till he loses 8 games. I'm going to fly a banner. Yeah, right. You'll be doing that for the rest of your life because
yeah,
nothing's ever
going to
meet everybody.
And I hope I don't sound like a hypocrite saying this because I have been critical of what's been going on in the program for many, many years, and justifiably so. I mean, this is it, Larry. Like, this is it.
Yeah.
Like, you have a guy in
the head
coach's
office. Oh, yeah, no more excuses,
office.
Gary. This is it. This is it. You're
this
right.
Is it.
No more excuses. They
no
got everything they wanted.
Yep.
Yep, they got everything.
You got
they
all
got
the
a
money
great athletic
need.
Director.
Yep. As good as it,
and that's
as,
another
as
thing we
got
to talk about. Yep.
As
you
good
got
as
a
it gets.
Great athletic director that knows everything about the athletic department and not just football. And I'm sorry, I heard a lot of crap that I took a lot of crap because I said, how can you even think about hiring a Bernie Kosar or Alonzo Highsmith for an athletic director? That's not
no.
really thinking the what you're talking about. I mean, they're great for the football program, but they're gonna go tell Paige over at the tennis that she can't have new or they can't travel this year. How
right.
the heck do they know? And that's the one thing that I'm glad they got somebody in place who's going to put other people in place that are qualified. Yeah, yeah. This is it. You're right. I mean, there's no more chances because you've given them, in football especially, every new start. You've given them so many new beginnings, and, excuse me, we bought into it all the way.
I mean, like I was saying, like I have been critical, and you and I have had a million conversations about what's been going on there for years. And the criticism that myself or, you know, occasionally you or anybody else ever had, it was justified. It was warranted. If anything, it probably wasn't as loud as it needed to be. And,
right.
you know, they finally found the will to make these changes. And so, you know, now, like, this is it. And I think the fan base needs to understand that. Like you know, they're not winning every game next season, okay? They're going to lose, and don't go to the stadium and start booing. Don't go on talk shows.
Flying planes.
And start flying planes that the coach needs to be fired and this and that. This is Miami's best shot, Larry, and I know you agree with me. This is Miami's best shot to get this done anytime in the next decade. And, you know, the fan base should be an asset to it now. This is not a joke. This is not a fly-by-night operation that's going to be going on there. It is going to be funded. It is going to have high-quality people working in that building in every area, in the weight room, player evaluation, dining, you know, player diet. There's not an area of that program that's not going to be addressed appropriately. And, you know, it's time to look at it a little differently, I think. And I'm assuming you agree.
Yep. Well, yeah. And because of the fact that, you know, where Mario came from, he pretty much had every amenity possible. You know what I mean? They weren't afraid to throw out some money for their sports programs at Oregon. I mean, everybody knows it. But the one thing, like you said, I think he came here with a number of stipulations in his own head. And one of them was that they've got to do what it takes. They've got to give him all the material to be that program that everybody wants them to be. And they have. It looks like they have. And now it's up to him because of the fact that now that he has that, you know, that carte blanche and then he's got that green light, now he could start hiring the best of the best of. And guys, like I said, and I just think that you're 100% right. This will be the final deal because they've given you an athletic director, and I listened to him last week on an interview, Gary, and I'll tell you what, he's got his stuff together. I listened to him how, you know, he just goes about explaining different things and, Yeah. You need somebody like that. I think he and Mario hit it off immensely because of the fact that they both are workaholics for the cause. And so I think there's a lot to be happy about. But you know what? Also with the recruiting, I think people are going to be really surprised. You know what type of class he came up with. You know, just in a short time, you know, whether it be through the transfer portal or the freshman, and you had mentioned, you know, if they signed those
I think we'll have to judge it when it's in its entirety, and I think it's going to look a lot better in its entirety than it may look tomorrow in its condensed form after just the early period.
Exactly, but even you said there's going to be a lot of programs. I mean, you have another major program in this state, Florida, who's going to be doing the same. And they're way worse off, I mean, you know, than Miami is as far as where they're at recruiting-wise. At least Miami's had that stellar 21 class, and they had a really good 20 class. So they're kind of, you know, ahead of a lot of schools. And I just think that, you know, with Mario Cristobal, listen, there's a lot of kids that are down in Miami that excelled this last year as freshmen, whether it be redshirt or true freshmen. And don't you think that they're on the horn campaigning for a lot of these kids too? You know, I mean, I'm sure they are. They go, hey, dude, we've got it. We've got it. You come, and by next year we're going to, you know, and that's the way it is. And I think that's where Miami's going because of what you said. There's nowhere else. You can't say, oh, well, we should hire this guy. No, you've got the guy you want. You've got the athletic director that's going to take you there. So now let's see what happens.
All right, Larry, I'm going to mention the dreaded A word, which is kind of poisonous down here in South Florida, and that's Alabama, and they always come down and steal somebody. And this year it looks like it's going to be Earl Little Jr. Your thoughts on Earl Little Jr., how good a player he is, and how big of a loss that is for Miami?
Yeah, it is. Any legacy is the loss, you know, I mean, but because you like to keep that transition going. But, you know, sometimes it's not meant to be. And like I said, you know, when I rattled off the Derek Thomases and people like that, you know, some they do leave. And this is a guy that I think will end up playing safety. He's a corner now. I just, you know, I watched him in the Miami Central game. You know, eventually they moved him over to the safety spot and they played him at both. He's got the hips and his dad is, you know, really taught him a lot, and so does Pat and Darryl and all those. You see, that's the thing about heritage. If you're a defensive back, holy mackerel, you know, because, you know, you had Earl Little Jr. and you had, you know, Pat Surtain and you had Darryl Porter all playing in the NFL. So, yeah, he's really good. You know, he's going to, you know, is he going to be one of those instantaneous starters? Maybe not, but he'll be like Battle and maybe in his second year or so. Or third year, you know, rise up a little bit and play. And it depends because now he's going against the best in the country every day in practice. So if wide receivers start torching him or if he's not coming up and make plays, he's going to have to work harder and harder. And it's, but I like
I'm going to make a prediction, Lair. I'm going to make a prediction right now that in 2 years or a little, we'll be back at Miami. And Mario Cristobal's been kind of like alluding at that kind of thought. Like what he's saying is that, you know, when his recruiting approach has changed, like, you know, obviously you want to win on every kid, but you're going to have a lot of these kids that leave that end up coming back into your picture a couple years down the road because maybe they're not, you know, maybe they're going into a little bit of a buzzsaw. You know, you go to Alabama as a defensive back. I mean, I'm sorry. That is as competitive of a situation as you will ever find as an athlete. And they're going to sign 4, 5, 6 guys, and at least half of them are never going to make it there. And, you know, it's a great point. And I'm going to make a prediction right now that a couple years from now, Earl Little Jr. will be back at Miami.
All right. But you know what? Yeah, and I see. It's the same thing as, like, Rambo coming to Miami last year because the wide receiver room ironically is emptied out at Oklahoma. It was easily one of the best in the country. So, and that's why somebody like Rambo a year after they lost the other kid to the Dallas Cowboys and a tremendous receiver comes to Miami and lights it up because he's given an opportunity. We'll see, you know, I mean, I've heard rumors too that Marvin Jones Jr. Maybe headed up to Alabama as well.
Yep, I believe it.
But the success they've had with Dallas Turner, who played this year and played a big role for Alabama out of St. Thomas after, you know, worked with Jason Taylor. And then, you know, you look at some of those guys. I mean, it's just, it may be in the cards, but the Nigel E. Kelly kid, I'm telling you, get him into the tutelage of whoever it is. I'd like to see Jess Simpson today, but I don't know what his relationship with Mario is.
Yeah,
I've always liked Jess. You like Jess as well, or no?
Yeah, I'm not sure what Mario is thinking right now at.
Yeah, me either. So I don't want to speculate. But anyway, you know, I mean, I'm sure whoever he gets is going to be really good, and he's going to coach somebody like him up, just like Roberts last year from Columbus, who I think is going to be an absolute freak because he's big, strong, and he's exceptionally smart. So, yeah, I'm excited about him. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, Miami could, you know, as they land these kids, you know, you look at them and see what you have, but I think people are going to be pleasantly surprised that Mario's back here for the long run. As you said,
no doubt. Signed a 10-year contract. I think he's planning on finishing his career here, Larry.
Yeah, that's a smart, and because, you know, I mean, certainly after he goes through this contract, and he gets anywhere near that money, he'll be able, you know, and his family, and that's another thing too, you know, I mean, I guess family is so important, and now his kids finally get to be here full time and get a chance to see their cousins and, you know, and know the family, and, you know, it's all new, but it's, you know, it's a great environment, you know, for them to grow up in because they know a lot of people. So, yeah, you're right, and then, you know, and then having Coach Mirabelle with him has been his right-hand guy forever since FIU, and as far as knowing offensive linemen, he certainly does, and he's done a great job, and he's going to keep it going. You'll see. It's just Mario's so in tune, you know, to trying to be the best, and he's got to surround himself with that too. So, you know, but that we could never fault Manny for, because they told him to upgrade, or he was advised to upgrade both ways, and he did. So I can't take that away from him.
I got to ask you about Julian Armella, another South Florida kid that clearly is going to get away. I'm not sure where he's going. I don't know if he's going to Florida State or Alabama or what. I don't know if you've heard anything on that front, but also your thoughts on Julian Armella in general.
He's a really good player. I mean, you know, I think he's got a long way to go from a technical standpoint. And he needs to make just a total commitment around the clock to getting in the weight room, because wherever he goes, he's gonna have to. He's a big kid, but you know, that was. But he really, over the last year, has changed his whole you know, outlook and on himself and in the game. So I think wherever he goes will be good. I think he would be better off to go to an FSU, probably, you know, whatever your legacy, especially his dad went there and everything. I think it'd be a good thing for him. You know, in that situation, get away from this area, which he needs to do, I believe, and you know, just be on his own and carve out a future for himself. But he's good. He's a really good player. You know, him being from, you know, South Florida and Mario having all these ties, you never know. I know that'd be way at pulling something right out of a hat. But if you ever thought about that, that's. You know, his dad was an outstanding player back in the day. You covered him, I think, right?
I believe I did, yeah.
Yeah, you did at Springs, yeah. So he really good, and I like him.
Larry, Shamar Stewart, maybe the best player coming out of South Florida this year.
Yeah.
You know, I guess it would be between him and Nigel Eek and maybe the Saints. I mean, your thoughts on Shamar Stewart? He's not going to sign, it doesn't appear, till February. Mario Cristobal is going to become his best friend, I guarantee you, because Shamar will be the focal point of February recruiting, no doubt. How good is Shamar? And do you think Miami can reel him back in from what looks like Texas A&M is leading right now?
Well, I think he's really, really – he's a talented young man. He's got size. He's got – you know, really good quickness. He's just lags probably behind what a lot of kids do. And they're, you know, being technical, you know, you can only teach a kid that so much. I think he needs to get to that next level and let that, you know, he's a really good player, but he could be a really, really good player. And that's what we just talked about, development. And I don't think he's what Nigel Eek is right now. because Nigel Leake's more athletic. He's a kid. Remember, a couple of years ago, he's only Nigel Leake was like 195. He was really small. I mean, thin. But he always had that quickness, that great first step, and he's just really athletic. He's getting stronger. So that's the difference between the two. But, boy, you'd like to have them both in that class because, you know, you talk about development. You could develop them both together, and, boy, they could be bookends for a couple of years.
Yep, no doubt. Kenyatta Jackson from Chaminade never really considered Miami at all. I mean, like, at all. Is going to Ohio State. How big of a loss is he, and why do you think that Miami didn't even get a cup of coffee with him?
Yeah, well, good story. He's a fast track to the first round in the NFL. I can tell you that right now. He's in the mold of the Boses. He is. You'll see. This kid just – I watched him tonight. As you know, I went to the taping for the Nat Moore Trophy, and Kenyatta was one of the four kids that were in the awards. And I've watched him three times live. He's a man-child. And here's the deal. He was a late bloomer who went to Everglades High School that really wasn't technically sound. His dad had to take him off the field as a freshman because he just didn't – he was embarrassed. This kid worked his tail off. Once he got to Chaminade at the end of his freshman year, he's worked like no other player in this area. He's a major loss. He's what Leonard Taylor was last year as a defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. And I watched him, I got to say, four times live this year. And I'll tell you what, he'll get to Ohio State. It's going to be awfully tough. I know they got kids, but it's going to be awfully tough to keep him off the field, even as a true freshman.
All right, Larry, final thought before we let you go. What does Mario Cristobal need to do to get the state of Miami back? You know, obviously, that's been the mission. Nobody's been able to do it. You know, what does Mario need to do here to get the state of Miami back?
Well, and that means that you're talking about being in the national championship hunt. And right now, they've got to deepen this team. This team has no depth. Basically, other than running back, and we saw what happened this year when you were forced to use true freshmen. When you have depth on a team, and I've said this, I think you and I talked before, back in the day when Miami was good, whether it be in the late 80s or even the early 2000s, when you went to a spring game and you walked behind the bench and looked at the names of the jerseys and you go, oh, man, I forgot they had him. See, that's when you know you're back and you know that you're in the mix every year. Miami doesn't have that type of depth. All those eye-catching guys are playing. You know, I mean, their bench is really not good. You know, I mean, after you look at – I mean, obviously there's that quarterback, Tyler Van Dyke, had to prove himself, just like Jake will have to and everybody else. But there's just – the offensive line has no depth. They're thin on defensive tackles. They got a couple, but, you know, a few that are really good. You see linebackers. I don't think there was many teams with a winning record this year. And you look back in the NCAA that had a linebacking core like Miami did. Miami's linebacking core was average, maybe even less than average. You know, I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, you were good in the secondary, and they had a lot, you know, but depth issue is a killer, and you know that. I mean, and everybody else who's vying for that playoff spot, I don't care who it is, Oklahoma, you know, Oklahoma State now is getting a lot deeper. Miami's got to get deep, and that's where Mario, that's where I say, clean. If you know guys in that transfer portal, let's get them in. Let's get them in. Get as many as you can get in, and then what you do is then you start winning, you build things up, then you get the freshmen. And then you start, you know, the Tracy Howards and the Duke Johnsons who were forced into playing as soon as they got here. That you can't do that. That's not how you build a program. That's why Alabama's got these kids keep rolling up. Oh, there'll never be another guy like him or Tua or that. Come on. They're going to have, because they know the system. They know they're going to win, and they'll sacrifice sitting the bench for that extra year. And that's just where Alabama's and those type of schools. And Miami can get there, but they've got to build. They've got to stop, but not stockpile with just kids. They've got to get, people who can get in there and make a difference. And that's where I'm confident. I think that he's been the best recruiting type of head coach that we've had in a long time here.
Mm-hmm. He's Larry Bluestein, everybody. Blue, I think we've taken enough of your time for tonight. Thank you so much for stopping by Cane Sport Live, and appreciate the opinions and insight. And we'll see how tomorrow goes, and I'm sure we'll be talking again very soon.
Good stuff. Thanks, Gary. We'll talk to you. Have a great night.
All right, Larry. Always a pleasure talking to Larry Bluestein, and nobody is more passionate, and nobody gets out and sees more high school players and games than Larry. And when he gives you an opinion, it's from a foundation of knowledge, and that's why I love having him on the show at this time of year. All right, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the number one on your keypad if you want to come on the show. We're going to be all phone calls the rest of the way. Let's get right at it. Let's go now. Let me see where we were here in the queue. Let's go to the 786. You're live on Cane Sport Live.
Hey, Gary, my friend, how are you?
Hey, what's up, everything? You must have liked that segment.
I really did.
I know you were sitting there saying, "God dang it, I want to get on the show." And Gary's talking to Larry Bluestein.
No.
I know you love that segment.
No.
That was right up your alley.
Well, known Blue for a long time. He's a great man. He's helped a lot of kids. Not just all the kids that go to the glamour schools. It's the hundreds, probably thousands of kids, Gary, that he's helped go to the JUCOs, the NIs, the D2s, the D3s. The Ivy League schools. Blue does an amazing job, and just a phenomenal person here in South Florida. Doesn't get enough credit, Gary. Really doesn't get enough credit.
No doubt.
I think he gets credit.
I mean, who is considered a better source on South Florida high school football?
Nobody.
Than Blue? Nobody. So he does get credit. But anyway, what do you have for us tonight?
Well, Gary, I always like to admit when I'm wrong, and I know many times over the years we've had some very passionate, heated conversations, arguments, whatever you want to call them, on National Signing Day, on message boards. We've always gone after it based on the things that I've always told you will never change. So for all this to have transpired in the last couple of weeks, I just want to let you know, you always said, if they buy into it, if they invest into it, if they really buckle down and make this a priority, this place can be special once again. And my friend, we're just getting started. We're just getting started. I think the snowball effect is real. The people that have the influence in South Florida and throughout the country and have a love and a passion for this institution, that's real. It's tangible. And we are all in. We're back in the race. A couple of weeks ago, I told you, hey, there was a study in SI about how much a program it takes to really run one of the top-tier programs. And we have figures. We do figures out there. And that encompasses everything. What you pay a month for your stadium, you name it, it encompasses everything. It's nice to know that not only will we be up there, but we're probably going to set the bar even higher. There's a couple of families that are involved here in South Florida who've done some great work in the past trying to help kids out as well. They're involved now. It's just like when you look at the entire picture from afar, you see so many people that have a true vested interest, but they're willing to back it up with their money. So for me, I'm still in shock at times. I share this with a lot of people on social media. I'm still in shock that this is all actually transpired. But Gary, I got to give you credit, my friend. You always said this was possible and realistic.
100%. There was no doubt in my mind. They had to find the will, And They found the will with Mario, and then they went out and targeted the number one, who I think is the number one athletic director in the country. I mean, this guy is a total stud. I've known him for 40 years. And, you know, they went out and got him. I mean, nothing but credit to the president's office, you know?
Yeah, nothing but credit to them and all the big names that give all the big money. I mean, insane. This is kind of a weird pre-signed night, I guess. I mean, I've never – I think the early signing period has been around now for, what, six years?
I don't think it's that long.
But it's never been so quiet.
But it's bizarre the way this is going this year.
Bizarre to say the least, Gary. It's never been this quiet. But I think that the reason why most of us that have are well-versed in the game itself and everything that encompasses it, I think the reason why we're all pretty relaxed is we know we have the right guy at the wheel. We know that we finally have the alpha. You know, we finally have that person, that it person. And I'm not worried about who we're going to hire as coaches, as assistants, as who we're going to sign, whether it's transfer, primary portal kids. I don't know, and I really don't care. I just know that the guy we have at the helm and the guy that oversees him, we're on the right track, Gary. We're on the right track. And I really hope, and I've seen this on social media the last couple of days, can we just let people do their job? Stop with all the negativity. Stop with all the questioning. Stop with all – let the guy do his job. He's got a great staff already. He's going to figure out who he needs to keep, who he needs to go ahead and send away. He's going to make all those tough decisions. What freshman, what redshirt freshman doesn't look like they're going to be able to pan out here. He's going to make all those choices and decisions. And we're in great hands. But we have to let this guy do his job.
Yeah, this
and,
is
and
different.
I think,
And I said earlier, I hope I don't sound hypocritical saying it. Like, this isn't Manny Diaz walking into the head coach's office. This isn't the same. This isn't Al Golden walking in there. Even Randy. I mean, like, this is different. Okay, this is a much more accomplished, seasoned guy who you know has the foundation to get this done. Like, you know, he may or may not succeed. He'll succeed or fail on his own merits and how things go for him. But, like, you know, you got to, like, you know, give him an environment where, you know, he can thrive here. And the fan base can be a big part of it.
And the effort and the energy needs to be directed towards positivity. It needs to be directed towards the kids that are actually, you know, risking their physical and mental well-being day in and day out here. That's where the positive needs to be. It requires us to go ahead and, as a fan base, okay, let's go ahead now buy season tickets. I went ahead and got 4 season tickets left. And you know, Gary, I'm retired. I'm on a fixed budget. But, hey, I can work my 401k a little bit here, and I can do a little bit there with a 403b, and I can move around a little bit. You know, I have a couple of IRAs I can figure out what to do because, you know, while I'm here on this earth, I want to go ahead and enjoy what my passion is about to do and to be a part of it. So whether you're up in the club, where you're in the club level, whether you're up in the rafters, wherever you're at, go get season tickets. Now's the time to go ahead and get off your ass and truly support this program and invest, because the return on investment, I promise people, the return on investment, the ROI, is going to be huge. I wanted to touch last thing, Gary. The stadium stuff, I got to tell you, I was very fortunate to be around some very big games. I was able to be there the night that we upset Nebraska, okay? I've been a part of a lot of it as a spectator, okay? I got to tell you, the energy that I had, that we all firsthand witnessed and experienced that night against Notre Dame was beyond electric. That thing was rocking.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with Hard Rock that night.
No, and even I'll go back to the game we lost that we jumped out early on Florida State. That thing was more than, you know, more than just a good game. The energy there can really jump off in a second. The comeback game that we had against Florida State when Pitney makes that interception, I go on. there's been opportunities, and we've witnessed a little bit here and there, but that night against Notre Dame, when you're up there and you're competing for an actual national championship, it's different. And you get a chance now for 6-7 home games a year to experience it. So we got to go ahead and support this program. Now is the time to go ahead and get your tickets. Now is the time to get involved. Now is the time. Because you're gonna regret a year from now when the prices go up again, and now it's hard to be a part of it. So go ahead and invest now.
Yeah, I hope Miami doesn't do that though. Everything I know that they're spending money and all that, and they're gonna want to recoup their investment and all that. But let the stadium get full first. Like, don't get to 50,000 and fill the damn stadium first before you start doing something like that.
I totally agree with you. But we all know how this university works. Even when we're making great strides, we still have to go ahead and improve in other areas. Gary, I really appreciate your time. I really want to thank you for doing Kane Sport Live in the mornings. I mean, the morning Kane Sport, that's been a great 20 minutes every day, and watching you and Matt bicker and just take nice, polite jabs at each other. It's very entertaining. But the content that you continue to give us, the effort that you provide us, I really appreciate it. Gary, thanks for doing a great job. And hopefully in a couple of – I guess we play on the 30th, right? So hopefully on the
31st.
31st, is it? Okay, hopefully yeah. We can go out there. And one last thing, I promise this is it. I really hope this coaching staff that is out there right now, I know they're in finals right now, but the kids are running and lifting. But, you know, I really wish all those staff members and their families, just whatever happens and transpires in the next couple of weeks, I just wish them all the best. Got to thank people like Jeff Simpson and T-Rob, and just guys that have, you know, even and I'll go back and even say it out loud, Mike Rump. I mean, people that have put in a lot of time and effort. It doesn't always work out. That's the nature of the beast. It's a rough profession, but they're still human beings at the end of the day. And I just wish all of them and their families the very best, Gary. Gary, thank you so much for your time. Be well. And as always, go Canes.
All right, everything. Thank you as always for being part of the show. 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the one on your keypad if you want to come on the show. Let's go to the 850. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Hey, how you doing, Gary?
Doing great. Travis?
Yeah, it's Travis up here in town.
Man, I'm getting pretty good at this, recognizing voices and phone numbers.
I'm thoroughly impressed with that, actually. Yeah, that's pretty good, yeah. Man. You got a good memory. Good memory.
So what's up, man? What you got for us?
You know, I'm going to piggyback off of the very last thing that everything just said there. Hey, thank you to all the coaches for sucking at your job so bad that we got everything we wanted down here in Miami. We got the number one AD, like you were saying. Most of us got the coach that we wanted. Like you said, he's going to be here until, you know, he retires. I'm all for that. Let's do this. Let's get that rolling.
Yeah, it's time. It's time to stop changing coaches every 3 years. This guy has the foundation to be successful, and he's spent the last 20 years learning and studying what it takes. And you know, hopefully it comes together for him. I don't think it's going to be overnight. I think the roster needs a lot of work, but I know he'll be attacking it every second of every day.
Yeah, that's the one thing.
I saw him today.
Dedication.
They had the Dan Radakovich press conference today, and you know, Mario's walking around with a notebook in his hand and constantly making lists and things that he wants to get done, and just keeps attacking them 100 miles an hour every day.
The guy's incredible. I wish I had a third of his work ethic. I would be a lot farther along in my life.
Yep.
For
he
sure.
does, man. He's got better work ethic than any human being I've ever seen in my life, I'll tell you that.
I agree. Piggyback off of something that you said earlier, if the littles are listening, you might not want to do that plan that Gary laid out there to Bluestein about coming back in a couple years, because the way our boy Mario recruits, you might not have a spot. You know what I mean? That's going to be the difference.
Mario
some
likes
of these
them,
players
though.
Might
I mean,
think
Mario,
that.
Mario likes
so
it a
that's
little
cool,
now.
That's cool, but if he crushes it in recruiting in the next couple of years like we think, you know, there might not be any spots for a little comeback. Then where are you going? FIU, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So, I mean, maybe just think about that, Mr. Legacy. But, you know, anyways. So I just wanted to go on to something about the stadium, right? I know you're probably sick of hearing it. Recruiting, whatever, we pretty much know what's going to happen. Well, it kind of sucks that we don't get to hear about Coleman and Moss, you know, until the whatever, the AA game or whatever. But here's my point. Stadium, that's cool. Like everybody said, you know, if you build it, that's great. If you can figure out how to do it wherever you do it, great, you know, whatever. We also have the Hard Rock. We'll live with that, no problem, state-of-the-art stadium. Maybe you should listen to what Mario said in the press conference. And this is an arms race. And Miami's been kind of losing it for the last couple of years. We've started to catch back up, but that's just a start. Maybe instead of building the stadium, Mr. Ruiz, I don't know how to properly pronounce his name, maybe just take $100 million and dump it into the school, you know, like into the athletic department, like the Heck Center, the Wellness Center, like
happening.
The things that Shodell was talking about.
Yeah.
Let's get that cranking, you know, state-of-the-art gyms, you know, the locker room upgrade that's been talked about for the last decade. Let's get all that done and then maybe focus on the stadium that you're talking about.
Yeah, I think
I
some of that's
to,
already
I'm
happening.
Down in, oh well, that you know that's great to hear because I mean
it might not all be
what
Ruiz.
We need to do. We need to support Mario with everything, you know. Not
yeah,
just
it might not
fan
be
support.
All Ruiz, but I agree with you. I'm not in the camp who thinks that a stadium is the number one priority. They got a lot of priorities on campus before they start worrying about a stadium up the street. In my opinion,
right.
Now it doesn't mean they can't walk and
say
chew gum at the same
time.
That
the Heck needs to be gutted.
Oh, yeah, that's going to happen. They're going to gut the Heck. They are definitely going to gut the Heck and build a bigger athletic facility. I don't know what the hell they're going to do while it's being done, but they may have to do it, like, in stages or something. But that will happen. The front of the Heck is going to get replaced. There's no doubt about it. That leads up to the Schwartz. It'll definitely get gutted and replaced.
And which one of our guys owns Camping World?
Oh, what's that
Moss?
Guy's name? No,
Lamonis?
It's not Moss. It might be Lamonis. Yeah, I'm trying to remember if Lamonis owns Camping World. But anyway, so go ahead. What's your question? I'm going to try to figure that out. I get them all mixed up.
Well, I just got an idea for him. Maybe you could pass it along.
Yeah, he owns Camping World. Yes, he does. Lamonis does.
Okay, so
Camping
the Lamonis guys. All right, Lamonis, man. Can we get a $500,000 a year from you towards the team just for offensive line? And if you're a starter on our offensive line, you get $100,000. Let's buy and pay for the best offensive line with the two best offensive line coaches in the country. Don't kid yourself.
That,
you know, I mean,
it's gonna that stuff's gonna happen. Miami is gonna have a top shelf NIL program, huh?
Yeah, that's
it
what
will.
We need
it,
to happen. That's
no, it's gonna
where
happen.
We're not.
It is going to happen.
What's the guy with American Top Team? He was talking about he wants to get businesses. There's an idea right there. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
well,
let's get one.
That. I think you're going to see these other guys get involved, and you're going to see Miami be one of the better NIL schools in the country, in my opinion. We'll see.
Awesome.
If they can pull it off.
Well,
I think they have the will on that, too.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with everything. The president, all the boosters that stepped up. Hey, Epstein, I'm never going to forget you, though, man. Never going to forget you. And that's all I got to say. Thanks, Gary.
All right, man. Thank you for being part of the show, Travis. 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. Let's go to the 504. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Gary, what's up, man? How you doing? It's Roland, man.
What's up, Roland? How you doing this week?
I'm good, man. It's so good, man, to see all the changes with the AD and coaches. Just a hell of a feeling, man, just to see the whole program just going in a positive direction. And it's not something that's going to happen overnight, but just to see that big change it feels different. You know what I'm saying? It feels different.
Yeah.
You could tell that some's going to be huge from this entire ordeal with a new coach, new staff, and in the stadium deal, like you were talking about. And I believe that's gonna happen too. But first and foremost, you know, getting those assistant coaches and getting the best assistant coaches you possibly can. And I had two coaches, and what's your thoughts? One is Ryan Nielsen, the D-line coach from the Saints as a DC. And what's your thoughts on Ken Dorsey? Is he going to stay in the NFL, or do you think he would possibly come back to the University of Miami?
The first one I don't know anything about. My opinion on Ken Dorsey is that Mario needs to think bigger than that. I like Ken Dorsey, nice kid, played at Miami, obviously the whole thing, has been a quarterback's coach in the NFL, hasn't been an offensive coordinator, hasn't been in the fire as the guy that has to dial up the big plays. And, you know, Mario has an unlimited budget. I shoot for the moon. I go after the best freaking dudes in the game. And I don't take a chance. This program shouldn't be a lab experiment anymore. I want a proven dude that's done it under fire at the highest level, huh?
Ryan Nielsen, the D-line coach for the Saints?
Yeah, I don't know much about him. I can't really comment on him.
Okay.
But, you know, a guy whose name I'm hearing for the OC job is a Kendall Briles is one. You know, is
What's
he good enough?
Kendall Briles?
I don't know. I don't really obviously I've heard of him. What'd you say? You don't like him from Miami?
What's your thoughts?
I don't know. Like I said, I've heard of him. I wasn't overly blown away by what he did at Florida State.
Now
he's at Arkansas. He did okay.
Looking at position coaches in the NFL?
I would look at everything everywhere. To me, it's like I want dudes, man. I would like to see Mario take it. If you don't build an elite staff, and I think he will, but if you don't do that, what's the point of having all the money? Like, you don't need all the money to just hire normal coaches. You need the best damn coaches, the best recruiters. If he could put that together here, this program's going to win. You know, he can't do
it's
it
gonna
all
be
himself.
It's going to be through the roof. But
it's gonna be through the roof,
Miami,
and he's got the budget. Miami's finally willing to invest in these people. Go get the best guys.
The biggest intangible that Cristobal brings to Miami, and I think you can attest to this. And I hate to use his language, but it is what it is. He's gonna be a dog ass coach, and these players, all that soft shit, all that poor tackling, that shit is gonna be eradicated. All the extra, the chain and fuck all that shit. It's all about Miami. Even when you go back to, Rohan Marley, you got kids, man, that's hungry. You want the hungry. Fuck that 5-star shit. I know that sounds good and all, but you want that hungry. You want that dog ass, corner, linebacker, a kid that purely wants to be at the University of Miami. You know what I'm saying? Versus, I know this star stuff, all that, that's all sounds good and all, but I'd rather have a kid that's he may not be a super top tier, but he can develop. And I think that's been the problem that the guys that we have coming in, they got to come in and play as a freshman. They can't redshirt. They got like Lyndon Taylor. I wish Lyndon Taylor could have redshirted this year. You know what I'm saying? Instead of having to, play. But we got to get back to just that killer instinct on defense, on just being nasty. And that's what Cristobal, I believe, will bring in And I don't think Miami has had that since the Butch Davis days.
Yep. No argument. All right, man, you got anything else for us tonight?
No, that's it, man. Just keep me home.
All right. Thanks for being part of the show. Talk to you next time. Let's go to the 305. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Gary, what's up, man? How you doing?
Doing great. Who's this?
This is Cali6Kane from the
hey,
message board.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Hey,
before
you start talking, let me give some breaking news here. We've just gotten word that Landon Ibieta, the wide receiver that has been committed for so long, he's going to flip away from Miami. Not a surprise. Wouldn't be anything I'd get too crazy about, quite frankly. But he is going to sign with LSU tomorrow morning. So good luck to Landon Ibieta. That was always his dream to go to LSU. They did finally offer with the new coach, and he'll be headed there. Anyway, go ahead.
I was about to announce that as well.
Okay.
But I was going to ask you about some transfer candidates that Canes fans know very well. One of them is Frank Ladson, wide receiver, and the other one is the defensive end from Florida. And you know who I'm talking about.
Chris Bogle?
Off the top of my head.
Chris Bogle?
Correct, yes.
I don't know. I haven't spoken, obviously, to either one of them. I think Ladson would find a pretty crowded young group of receivers here. I would probably counsel him to go somewhere else. I mean, he couldn't really get it done at Clemson. But there are some good receivers in this program, and I don't know that he would find an easier path here necessarily. You know, in terms of Bogle, I have absolutely no idea what he's thinking. So I can't really comment on that. I'm not surprised that he didn't make it at Florida, though, to be honest with you. I mean, I liked him coming out of high school. I wasn't blown away. I didn't think that it was the greatest loss in the world or anything. You know, he was a skinny kid. You know, he was a decent pass rusher in high school, but I never considered him like a must-get kind of recruit. You know, I'm not surprised at all that he's in the portal now a few years later.
Gotcha. That's all I got to say, man. I'm very happy with everything that's going on. Happy to be on the show. Thanks again, Gary.
All right, man. Talk to you next time. 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. Hit the 1 on your keypad. If you want to come on the show, we're going now to the 973. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Gary.
What's up, Russ?
What's going on, man?
Doing good.
Hey,
talk to us. What you got?
Got a question. Who released that false report with the whole NIL thing?
I don't know.
That was going around.
I don't know.
Why was it able to get to, like, why did it get that far up to where it got to ESPN?
I don't know. I can't explain it. Do not know.
You know, they looped us in with BYU, and then it's almost like whatever it takes, whatever should be done, they'll do whatever you need to do to try to sabotage things.
I'm pretty sure they haven't even contacted Miami about it or asked any questions about it, so I don't know.
It just kind of threw me off, you know, because why now? Why everybody else is succeeding?
Yeah, I don't know. But, I got pretty in-depth knowledge on that NIL deal. And, you know, I think that they're going to have a hard time proving that. I think that Dan Lambert did what he was supposed to do in setting that program up. And has it been executed perfectly by the letter? You know, maybe not, but it's the first year of NIL, and I'm not sure anybody's organized to the degree that they need to be in some of these NIL things. And, you know, I think that they can voice some concerns and tell Miami, listen, if you're going to have these kind of deals coming in, you guys need to do a little bit better job of making sure your players are doing what they're supposed to do by the contracts. But I can tell you without question that all those contracts that were signed were very well written contracts and were executed properly. And, you know, from there, if there was a breakdown in the execution, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. And maybe that's something that they should look at and improve, obviously. But I don't see it as where it's an NCAA issue. Like, you know, unless the NCAA is trying to set a tone to tell schools, listen, you got to do this, that's fine. But if you're looking to punish Miami in year one of NIL because maybe everything didn't go perfect, no, that's ridiculous. That would be pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. But, you know, it's just a matter of, like, to me, you know, you're trying to use us as the, you know, the one that you want to put the pressure on now. And I look at it as this, you know, they realize things are about to really, really turn around. And I think a lot of people are getting scared. But anyway, let's talk about some of these possible happenings for tomorrow. And, you know, the embarrassment of, you know, numbers that we've left with Manny and everybody else, is their lack of vision to order to help, you know, bring in the proper kids and the right kids. Tomorrow is not the is not the end of all or the ceiling, man. It's actually, I don't even mind the numbers, because now I look at the opportunity. I just look at the opportunity. It's something that's going to get him even more angry and very upset and even more driven. So, you know, I just think that's going to drive. The only thing I'm a little concerned about is what you guys was talking about earlier with the coordinators. I you know what? I want him to take his time. We have to get it right now. Have someone that's going to be around for 4 or 5 years, probably 3, 4, or 5 years. But every time we get one, we need to get the right one. And it's just a wheel, a Ferris wheel, is keep turning over. And the next person that comes in is coming into a good situation. And that's why he needs to get it right now. Where do you see him kind of make – here's my thing about this whole recruiting thing and the class and guys coming in. He's an offensive line coach. And we were always able to get wide receivers. We was always get running backs and wide receivers. But I want to start making some marks on the offensive and defensive line, period. If tomorrow comes and I get some JUCO kids or some guys out of nowhere, and majority of those 7 guys are on the defensive and offensive line, I'm good. Mm-hmm. And we should be good with that, because it's a foundation that he's going to set that's going to put notice to people. No longer guys are going to be, no disrespect, I hope family members not listening, I'm just being real. At one point when Donaldson came in 55, he was a certain weight, and he's graduating. I know he got injured, but still, he's graduating at almost that same weight, almost maybe 20 pounds lighter than he was when he first came. He never got in shape.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the things that we need to see change. Those are the things that must change, and I think it's going to change because of him. We just got what you call some – no, in coaches' forms, some adults in the room. We just got some adults in the room, okay? And now we have some adults being an AD. No disrespect, but we're just keeping it real. And ain't no slang or chain or foolishness that's going to change that. It's no turnkey. You probably have never heard me being this serious. It's not a turnkey situation. It's the beginning. I'm not mad with the class tomorrow. I look at it as an opportunity, Gary. An opportunity, man. Okay? Mm-hmm. An opportunity for everybody to really, really get hungry and push and work out behind them, because it's obvious they don't want us winning, and they're not going to have a choice soon. They're not going to have a choice. All right? So, guys, let's just get on board. Salute to D Black. We was tweeting today. And let's go, man. Let's keep me on hold. And,
all right, Ross.
Let's go. All right.
Thank you, as always, for being part of the show. 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. Hit 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. A programming note for everybody, our next Cane Sport Live will be December 28th, the week of the bowl game. That's 2 weeks from tonight. We will be skipping next Tuesday night, Christmas week. I think people got other things going on. But we will we'll be back December 28th to talk more about what's going on and obviously the bowl game as well. Let's go to 305. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Yeah, a lot.
305, you with us? Going once, twice. You sound a little distracted there. I'll try to come back to you in a minute. Let's go to the 347. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Hey, Gary, how you doing, man? This is Kwame.
Juan?
Hello?
Yeah, you said Juan, right?
Hey. Yeah, no, this is Kwame. How are you?
Oh, Kwame. Hey, what's up, man? How are you? Talk to us. What you got?
Hey, question for you. I'm not sure if you guys went over this or not, but if you could maybe inform me about what you're hearing on position coaches. I know the coordinators are still sort of being determined, and usually – coordinators like to bring their own guys. So, you know, I'm not sure what the admin
give us a couple days on that. I mean, I don't want to just start throwing, you know, BS out. I mean, the stuff that seems kind of set on stone is Aaron Feld is the strength coach. I've heard T-Rob has a chance to stick as safeties coach. I'm expecting Rod Chance to come from Oregon and be the cornerbacks coach, but that's very early in the game. The wide receivers coach from Oregon, Brian McClendon, I think is going to come. I think that Steve Field will stay on the staff in some role, whether it'll be as remain as tight ends coach or whether he goes inside and heads up the recruiting effort, you know, I think still remains to be determined. So there's a lot going on. Mario's been recruiting and doing calls on the side and things like that. It's hard to really pin down where this is going. I know he spoke to Joe Brady, spoke to Kendall Briles. Brady's preference is to stay in the NFL. He doesn't really love recruiting. I don't know that he's a great fit with Mario.
I remember that.
Yeah, I'm not sure he would be a great fit with Mario. So, it's really, you know, I'm sure there's a little more to it than what I just said, but we just haven't really put a ton of time into that yet. We will do that starting Thursday.
Fair. I've been hearing, you know, this new iteration of these Twitter spaces is so innovative and interesting to sort of listen to and pop in and pop out when you want to, but it seems like the fan base out there is at risk averse to having coordinators who will only be 1 or 2 year rentals before they move on to their next thing, which is usually a head coaching gig. And I think folks should not be that risk averse to having great coaches that want to come in here and then get head coaching jobs. It only increases the want to for other really quality, good coordinators and position coaches to come here. So I would love a guy like Will Muschamp on a 1 or 2 year rental because I know he can do two things. I know he can scheme a defense and he can recruit his ASS off. What are your thoughts on Will Muschamp? That channel the calls have been made, but
I mean,
know
that's
people
an experienced
have talked about
guy.
A lot, but
I mean, he's an experienced guy. He's done it. He's been a head coach. He's recruited. He knows people in Florida. I don't know that I can't see a whole lot of problems there. I don't, you know, he'd have to interview against what other candidates Mario puts out there. But, you know, he's a respected guy.
I like him a lot. I think you kind of want, you know, future head coaches in those coordinator positions.
Yeah, by the way, a name I forgot to say is Alex Mirabal is offensive line coach. That's obviously definite.
Yeah, he's one of the best in the business. Although I didn't realize looking at some of his pictures, I thought they were joking. I realized he's only like 5'2".
I think he's 5'5".
5'5".
Yeah, it's not prototypical, but it's fun to watch, man. He gets
after. Not at all, but he's an excellent recruiter as well, man. Just looking at some of the boards that and guys that he was able to land, he's just an excellent, excellent, excellent recruiter. You know, I want a staff of killers, Gary. You know, I see what Napier is doing up in Jortville and in Gainesville.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Corey Raymond being in Florida now, I want to see how he does outside of the Louisiana confines, but that's a big get.
Yep.
That's a big get. So I like that idea of having Rod Chance and T-Rob, you know, recruiting DBs together.
Mm-hmm.
I read your piece on Cyrus Moss. He's announcing Friday, you say?
I believe so, yeah. I have not been we're supposed to be getting an update on that here. Let me see if that's happened while we've been sitting here doing the show. But, yeah, we actually just posted an update on it. Matt just spoke to him. Let's see. Chris Ball put a lot of effort into him during the visit. It looks like he is going to sign on Friday, and he's going to have to talk it over with his family, and it sounds like there's a chance.
That would be.
Oh, wow.
He's
going to sign privately Friday and then not announce until January 8th. Jesus.
So him and Coleman are announcing at the All American game then.
Right. Yeah. Good luck. Good luck on that. But we'll see. he's going to try to keep that silent for a month. All right. We'll see. We'll see how it works.
The reporters are too good at what they do.
Yeah.
And if he signs with anybody on Friday, the crystal balls and all of that will come rolling in.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But, yeah, the update on him.
So I guess my final sort of takeaway before I hop off is I guess you're sort of seeing like a slow – you're going to get some guys that we might get tomorrow, like a Nigel E. Kelly. And then over the course of the next several weeks, you'll see a trickle effect where you'll have to wait until January for like guys like Coleman and Moss. And then like this new offensive tackle that they offered out in Washington State, I think. That 6'6" kid that's like a 5-star.
Yeah. Yep.
He's not signing until February. Shamar's not signing until February, so
no.
You know, we could be looking at, like, when it's all said and done. And this is not even counting, like, the transfers. So I'm kind of excited.
This could take on a whole new look by February and could end up being pretty decent, no doubt.
Yeah, when you take a step back and look at it, like.
Yeah,
Are you thinking maybe, given where we're at now, are you thinking maybe top 20 finish?
I don't want to put a ranking on it. There's no place right now in the ranking. Like, who the hell knows? I mean, right now it's no place. Like, I wouldn't even worry about the ranking this year.
All right, Gary.
Because,
well,
you know, a lot of the class is going to end up being transfers that don't even count in those rankings. So, you know,
yeah.
We'll see. Don't worry about where Miami is in the team ranking this year. It doesn't matter.
I'm worried about how many blue chips they bring in. That blue chip ratio is measurable. And so I would like to see a lot more blue chips versus projects. I respect mm-hmm. everybody's evals, but I like the direction that I haven't seen in a long time. And like where you have a visit weekend where it was all blue chips, very little projects.
You'll see
walking
it.
Around the heck.
You'll see it. Give it time. It won't be obviously this year, but it will be next year, I think.
For sure, man. Thanks, guys.
All right, man.
Have a good show.
You got it. We'll talk to you next time. All right, let's try the 305 once more. Let's see if he's done arguing with his wife. You're live on Kingsport Live.
I ain't gonna get you off. I ain't gonna get you off.
305, you with us?
Mm-hmm.
All right, dude. You're going to have to – it sounds like you're busy at work. You're going to have to do it another night. Let's go to the 239. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Jerry, how are you?
Doing great. Who's this?
This is Adam in Atlanta.
What's up, Adam? What are you up for tonight?
Hey, man. I have to say, when last time I called, which was, I guess, 2 weeks ago, feels like 3 years ago, but it was Mario hadn't announced yet. It was the Tuesday of, you know, he would be announced the Monday following, so 6 days before. And I asked you what the schedule was. You're like, yeah, I think, you know, by Friday, Saturday, this thing's going to be wrapped up. It was like the hardest weekend of everyone's lives. What is going on?
I think it was the hardest weekend of his life, too.
Yeah, I mean, and I respect the guy for that. And that's actually part of what my first kind of question is about. I had never really bought into the whole concept that the media is out against Miami. Like really, like, who cares about one school that hasn't been relevant in 20 years, right? Like, there's 130, you know, Division I programs out there, and who knows how many Division II programs. Like, who cares? But I'm not going to lie. I actually might be seeing, you know, some shades of doubt come in because of what I saw after the way this was, quote unquote, handled with Manny being, you know, being retained for 3-4 days longer than people think he should have, and Mario being announced on Monday. You know, now the narrative is that it was a mess from the very beginning, and Miami is just this ruthless, horrible institution full of terrible people that don't care about their employees, and it was just terrible the way that we treated Manny, you know, this sweet little old man, you know, who coached us to 2-4 before finally going 7-5 in his third year, including losses to any teams that really had a pulse, to be honest with you. And it was just like, man, I think the media hadn't had to hate on Miami a little bit. And so I'd sort of been lulled into the position of, man, there probably wasn't anything there. There might be something there, man.
Here's the deal.
What did you think about
that? Here's the deal. This was a targeted hire. Okay, this wasn't let me finish. This wasn't like, oh, geez, we're going to go on a coaching search. We're getting rid of Manny no matter what. It wasn't that at all. It was like, look, we need to try to do better than Manny. We're not going to go on a major search. He did do well the second half of the season. But if we can get the guy that we think takes us to a much higher level, we are going to move on that guy. And they were able to do it. Period. Now, you know, if they hadn't gotten Mario, and it was in question until the very last minute, very honestly, I mean, I was asked to put a percentage on it on canesport.com, and, you know, I was saying 80% and all that, and I really felt strongly about it. But I'll tell you, based on information that I was getting, I went back to 55 the day before that hire got consummated, and you know, it was not a guarantee until the very minute that he took the job. And had he not taken the job, Manny Diaz would be the football coach today. So you could look at that two ways. Did they do Manny wrong, or did they give Manny a chance that if they couldn't get this one guy that they were going to let him stay? So I don't know, man. It's like, you know, ideally it would have played out a little differently, but listen, Manny's going to get millions of dollars. He just got the defensive coordinator job at Penn State. He's fine. Manny Diaz is just, okay.
No, and it's just funny to me. And I don't disagree with anything that you just said. It's funny to me because it does feel like if it were Florida, or, you know, no one's bashing LSU. No one's bashing Notre Dame. No one's bashing USC for never reaching out to Oklahoma about Lincoln Riley, right? Just they're not. But for some reason, they should be. I mean, honestly, the narrative should be Miami has decided and willed itself back into the college football conversation to the tune of $8 million per year to Mario Cristobal, to the tune of $8+ million per year for assistant coaches and coordinators, and to the tune of a major commitment of reinvestment and investment into facilities, and to the tune of getting one of the best athletic directors in the entire country by paying more than anybody else is getting paid. That's what the narrative should be. Miami is trying to get back definitively, not hoping it happens, but putting the pieces in place for it to happen. Instead, the media narrative is poor Manny Diaz. You know, they treated him so terribly. Miami took all this money away from the poor, sick, and dying people from COVID at UHealth. and from the faculty that haven't gotten raises since Reagan was president, and, you know, shame on them. And it's like, it struck me for the first time, and I was like, you know what, there may actually be some bias here. Anyways, it just sort of stood out to me. I never really bought into it in the 25 plus years I've been following the program closely since I was a kid. So anyway, I just wanted to make that comment. One of the comments you made earlier was about NIL, and that Cameron Williams, I think it's Cameron Williams, forgive me if I'm wrong about that, but he's the offensive lineman in Texas who's coming to Oregon, who people really thought, myself included, there was a good chance he could come and follow Mario to Miami. And he announced for Texas with, in my opinion, a dead man walking Steve Sarkisian at head coach. And people are alleging it's because of the $50,000 or $150,000 or something NIL deal that all the kids get over there. First of all, do you buy into that? And then secondarily, can you expand on what you think we're going to do on the NIL? You seem to feel pretty confident that we're going to be at the forefront of this thing.
I think you're going to see the guys that were behind going out and getting Mario also rally behind an NIL program. And, you know, when you talk about like the Moss brothers and some of these other Latin business leaders, they've got a huge network. And I think that they'll put together a network of companies and corporations that will participate in NIL at Miami and do deals with players. And I think that the prototype is going to end up being this year with Tyler Van Dyke. I think that they will put together a really good NIL deal for Tyler Van Dyke to show young high school who come to Miami and you achieve at a high level, you are going to get a big NIL deal. And, you know, they did it at Oregon this year with Kayvon Thibodeau, who had a few different really good NIL deals and made a lot of money. And I'm expecting it to happen here with Tyler Van Dyke this year.
So what about the concept of doing a less targeted NIL deal where it's just blanket for an entire position group or an entire side of the ball, offense or defense or something like it sounds like Texas is doing, which is allegedly how they got that Cameron Williams guy to commit to them. What do you think about something like that?
Yeah, I would think that we'll see some of that also. I think you'll see Dan Lambert come back and do the whole team again, you know, like he did this past year. And, you know, they may have to execute it a little differently. We'll see. But, you know, I think you'll see that. And you'll see a bunch of different ideas put into execution.
Did you see the article, flipping the recruiting for a moment, did you see, which I guess this is all tied into, right? But did you see the article that someone posted? I don't know if it was the Herald or Sun Sentinel or some beat writer or, you know, Michael Ruiz, you know, the new Oracle of Miami, as he calls himself or whatever. But about the 11 college coaches or high school coaches in South Florida that anonymously gave their opinion of Miami recruiting. Did you see this? It was today.
No, I did not see that.
Okay. Well, I'll try to post a link to it on the message board, but cutting to the punchline, one of the things that they said, that Miami can do better with, and I thought it was really telling because it was a brutal truth, but I want your opinion on it, is the concept that these kids are high school kids. You really start recruiting them if you're a major player, if you're UGA or if you're Bama, if you're, you know, Texas, OU, whatever. If you're one of these big, big schools, which hopefully we're going to be again when it comes to recruiting. I think we are already with Mario in the building. But these guys recruit 16-year-olds, and they show their facilities to them. They flash the sex appeal of, you know, I guess at Clemson it's the slide, and at Bama it's the waterfall, grotto, cave, Hugh Hefner pool, you know, thing with the steam baths or whatever, and all this stuff. And this coach, this high school coach in South Florida, who I guess has blue chippers, anonymously said he thinks that's a major area of deficiency and that it honestly sways kids. And I always thought it was sort of icing on the cake, but the thing that mattered the most was getting kids developed into the NFL for most kids. Do you think that this facilities thing is a real thing, or do you think it's being overblown?
I think with some kids it's a real thing. I think with others it's overblown.
Really? So there's kids out there that are making four-year college decisions and potential career decisions based on where the best training table is or where the best, you know, sexy, new, whatever is, where they're going to be spending all their time. As opposed to sort of the more nuts and bolts and fundamentals?
I think everything goes in what you're talking about. I think there's some kids that care about it, some and some don't.
Wow, that's just wild. In the back of my head, it's almost like, what's the character of that kid? Not as a human being, but as a football player. Are they going to be willing to grind at the level that a Mario Cristobal or Nick Saban or whoever's going to be, you know, forcing them to grind at? I mean, that's something else I'm excited to see. I'm excited to see our team in whatever's left of it. I know some guys are going to transfer out, but whatever's left of it, I mean, you call it the country club atmosphere, but live in sort of the Miami Marine Corps under Mario Cristobal, and just work and work and work and work and film study and drill and practice and, you know, everything just go, 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 and see what they look like when they get put through that. I think Mario has something called the fourth quarter, which is like an off-season program for weight and strength training, something like that. I'm expecting a lot of attrition, to be honest with you, from our team. People that are like, I didn't sign up for this. Screw this guy. This isn't the type of place I want to, you know, go. This isn't the type of coaching I want to receive. I'm going to go elsewhere. Do you think we're going to see a lot of that? And do you think Mario's going to run it like that?
I think, you know, a lot of how Mario runs things will depend on who's on his staff, what their strengths and weaknesses are. But I think you're going to see Mario look to have a very thorough game plan on pretty much everything he does, you know, without exception.
Yeah, it's going to be very telling when he hires these two coordinators, because he's sort of filling out most of the staff, it sounds like, underneath them with both good, you know, with good position coaches who also are very good recruiters. It's going to be interesting to see who he brings on for the defensive and offensive coordinator positions. Because to your point, I suspect they're going to set a lot of the tone for their sides of the ball. It does sound like Mario, I mean, he just recruits constantly, and it's almost like that's his passion above everything else. Not the X's
he
knows as much.
Well, I think he likes it all, but yeah, he is a passionate recruiter.
Yeah, do you think that him speaking in Spanish from Univision when they asked him to do that had an impact in any way in South Florida, or do you think people thought
absolutely.
That was...
Oh, 100%, because, you know, now he's going to be all over, you know, Spanish language television because they finally have somebody in there that can speak Spanish. They love that.
Yeah, I thought that was – I don't know if it was sort of like put on and planted or not or whatever, but I thought that was a pretty darn good move. Last question, and it's about the ACC. I keep hearing – that the ACC is significantly lagging behind in the revenue side from TV contracts, which is, as we all know, is where almost all the money comes from in college football at the conference level. And then the rest of it comes, I suspect, through ticket sales at the individual school level. But it's been being bemoaned that the ACC is, you know, at a power five, it's fifth, you know, that its leadership has dropped the ball on its contracts and not enough good marquee names and, you know, good television markets and everything else. Is that true? And then secondarily, if it is true, what are we going to do about it? Because we don't want to be in a conference where we are constantly playing from behind when it comes to cash flows, cash inflows from our TV deals.
Well, what I think is that ESPN is going to be under a lot of pressure because of this new SEC. I mean, you know, they're behind it. They're behind those teams going into the SEC, and like to me, you can't upset the balance in college football to the degree that they have. So I think that there's going to be a lot of pressure on ESPN to level the playing field, and I think that the ACC will be one of the first places where we see that, and I think TV money in the ACC is going to go up.
When you say level the playing field, do you mean ESPN is just going to pay all the Power 5 team conferences?
ESPN is controlling the whole thing.
Yeah.
I don't think you could just support one conference. Like, I don't see how that's going to fly.
Why does the ESPN seem to support the SEC even before they were winning championships, the left and right? Why are they supported by ESPN? What's the tie there?
Because the TV money is where it's all at, man. The TV money funds everything. I mean, ticket sales are great, booster donations are great, but it's really TV money that funds so much of college sports.
And so the SEC is just a bigger TV draw for ESPN than the other conferences?
Yes.
Got it. All right. Well, I don't know what the ACC has to do. I mean, Clemson's a pretty big draw, Florida State, Miami. Virginia Tech used to be, probably not anymore. We'll see if, Notre Dame, God, I'd love for them to just join the freaking conference already and be done with this baloney. But some of these, we're going to have to figure something else out because, we have the Big Ten's pretty strong. The Pac-12 is weak right now. The Big 12 is weak after this movement. But we got to figure something out because I'm nervous about all the ACC teams, just playing with half a deck of cards when it comes to the TV money. And that brings me to my last point, which is you saw that Dabo just elevated two position coaches to OC and to DC respectively after losing his two coordinators. Did you see that?
I did not, but I'm surprised
by it.
He did
that today. I got to tell you, if you're a championship team and program like they are, and you just had that mass exodus of such significant personnel and leadership, and you're just promoting two internal guys, I'm not trying to kick those guys down arbitrarily. I feel like they might have some issues here moving forward, Clemson.
I think you're going to see Clemson come back to the pack. I think you already started to see it this year. And I'll even make the prediction, I don't think Dabo is going to be there much longer. I think it's going to be time for him to move on somewhere else.
Yeah. Do you buy into this sort of he's waiting for Saban to retire to go to Alabama thing?
I don't know if he was, but I think he is now. I mean, he's going to be. I think he's going to be doing that very quickly if they're in the back in the pack again next year.
Yeah.
Before his star fades, but I don't know if Saban's retiring so fast. Like, there's no signs that Saban's retiring.
Well, the whole college football world just keeps speaking it out every year, hoping at some point it will speak into existence. It's like if you just keep saying it enough, guys, it'll eventually come true here. I saw that Mike Norvell got a year extension on his contract after going 5-7 this year. What a nutso place.
Yeah, I think some of these athletic directors are crazy the way they throw schools money around, and there's no reason. I mean, I say this not knowing what the terms are, because you can do an extension without without increasing the buyout. Correct. So the years mean nothing if the buyout is virtually zero.
But just the optics, right? I mean, you have a coach who...
Well, that's why they do it. They do it for the optics, because it's so that they could say to recruits, I'm going to be here for your entire time. They like to extend coaches out 3, 4, 5 years. But the key to the whole thing is the buyout.
I think we're going to see kids stop being attached to their coaches because, I mean, you had Brian Kelly leave Notre Dame to go to LSU. You had Lincoln Riley leave OU to go to USC. You had Mario Cristobal leave Oregon to go to Miami. I mean, those are three key movements that were not promotions. They were laterals. So all of a sudden, if you think a coach can lateral from an absolute marquee job to another absolute marquee job, and those four are just that, and Oregon and Miami are maybe one step below right now, but they have been marquee jobs in the past, I think that if you're a high school kid, you're saying all bets are off now. Who knows if my coach is going to be there? Who knows if Jimbo is still going to be at Texas A&M? Who knows who's going to be where? It's going to be wild to see how the one-time transfer rule amid this coaching carousel continues to play out. It does feel like as the ground continues to shift under our feet in college football, it does feel like things are becoming untenable, just as like an industry. I mean, it's an industry. Let's not kid ourselves. As an industry, it just feels like things are going crazy. And, man, I hope it doesn't implode in the next 3 years because I need Mario Cristobal to get us to a national championship game before it does. So.
Yeah, I don't think it's not going to implode.
I hope not. It's like it's So it gets me out of bed sometimes in the morning. Oh, and Matt Shadell should be very happy. You know, he's a recruiting guy. Job security, there's no better job security than Mario Cristobal running a recruiting operation that you have to cover. So,
We're looking at staff increases this year. I mean, we gotta increase our manpower to cover all the recruiting that's going to be going on.
Is that right?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Yeah, we're looking at all kinds of things.
So you're going to hire Shadell, a legion of Zoom for himself to actually employ? Phenomenal.
No, we're gonna add somebody else, hopefully, that will be part of the legion of Zoom. We'll see how it goes. But no, it's going to be wild starting next year. There's no doubt about it.
I can't wait, bro.
All right, man. Hey, thank you for being part of the show.
For sure. Thanks.
You got it. Bye-bye. All right, guys, last call for phone calls tonight. I'm going to try to attack a couple of the questions that were submitted on the message boards at canesport.com. ER1949 is asking that if Miami could have done it all over again, would they have fired Manny with Blake? I don't think so. I think they executed their plan exactly how they intended to. I think it worked out fine. They got a great head football coach. They got a great athletic director. And life goes on for Manny Diaz. He gets a lot of money, and he's now the defensive coordinator at Penn State. Where's the problem? I don't see where the problem is. And the University of Miami didn't have to throw away millions of dollars. They saved some money on the buyout by waiting. And they also didn't have to name an interim staff and an interim head coach, which also costs money. So I think everything played out fine. I don't see any problems whatsoever. Space Kane wants to know if the Radakovich hire impacts Miami sports across the board. No doubt about it. You know, spending all this new money on football, I think, puts pressure on them with Title IX, and I think they may have to add a women's sport. You know, maybe there was some talk about softball. Don't be shocked if you see that happen. Not that that's going to impact most of you guys out there listening to the show tonight, but I think the Radakovich hire is going to impact Miami sports across the board, unquestionably. He is a very, very good and very thorough athletic director. There's some questions about the portal. No, we do not know who Mario is going to be targeting in the portal. Another question about what's changing under the hood of the program. I think that there are a lot of areas that are going to get some budget help. You know, you look at football, I think they're going to rebuild the locker room. I think that's, you know, very much in motion. I think that you know, things like travel for some of the teams is going to get better, you know, bigger planes, maybe more charters, things like that. And then from there, I think Dan Radakovich will be looking at just about everything here in his first few weeks on the job and evaluate where the priorities should be. Sixth Ring is asking if there's any insight into the NIL investigation. The only insight I have is I don't even think they've even contacted the school about it. So I don't know if it's really as big an issue as it was portrayed. I guess we'll find out. I think it might put more pressure on execution of NIL deals and making sure that the players really are doing what they're supposed to do. What's Miami doing to keep up with what's going on at Texas with boosters paying $50,000 each lineman? Listen, I mean, if the players are actually doing something for it and they're legit deals, I don't think anything's going on. I think that that's, you know, within the books. If it's pay for play, like you come be an offensive lineman at Texas, we're going to give you $50,000 and you're not going to have to do anything in return for it, or it's going to be a joke, well, then I think that it's going to create problems. I mean, I think these NIL deals have to be legit deals where the players sign contracts and execute what they are agreeing to do. And I'm not sure they're all programmed that way right now. And it's going to take education of these players. Like I said, Canesport has one NIL deal that we did this year that we were not happy with the way it got executed. I mean, we're doing these deals legitimately with the players, and you know, we want to execute them. And there was one of the ones we did that didn't get executed properly, and we were not, you know, real thrilled with that, you know, because we're not looking to you know, play games or, you know, I mean, we're looking to do what the spirit of the NIL is meant to be, and that's to give players an opportunity to perform services and endorse products and things like that that allows them to put extra money in their pocket and benefit from their likeness and their name and the things that they're doing in their career. Advarkus wants to know if Zoe's coming. I think Zoe will have a meeting with Dan Radakovich at some point. And they will see if there's a role for Zoe in Dan Radakovich's athletic department. And, you know, I don't know how that's going to end up. There's also a question about Ed Reed. What happens to Ed Reed? I don't know how Mario is going to feel about having a ceremonial chief of staff. I don't see that going flying in a Mario Cristobal football program. If you're going to have a title and you're going to have a role in the program, you're going to really be there every day working. I am not convinced that's what Ed Reed really wants for his life. You know, I think he's got plenty of money, and I don't know that he's interested in working the kind of hours that a real Mario Cristobal staff is going to end up working. I mean, Mario works his staff very hard, and it's not for everybody to be on a Mario staff. So we'll see what happens there. What's the fascination with bringing back former players or staff by our fan base? That was by BK Hurricane, who actually I think called the show earlier tonight. You know, I totally agree with this. I don't think that everybody who works in the Miami Athletic Department or the Miami Football Program has to have gone to Miami. It's not necessary to have that kind of qualification. Now, if a former Miami guy is qualified and fits the bill the way Mario Cristobal, for example, was as the head football coach, that's awesome. But I don't think I agree with BK that should not be a qualification. Give me 1 second here. I got to take a quick sip of water because after 3 hours of talking, the throat's getting dry. Give me 1 sec. All right, Jay Collette. He's asking, what's the vice president title for Radakovich in addition to AD? I'll tell you what it is, Jay Collette. It's justification to pay him what you're paying him. I mean, you saw an uprising amongst the faculty of the university when word got out of Mario Cristobal's $8 million salary, obviously the highest paid employee of the university. And you have to have these tiers of executives if you're going to pay big money. Like Dan Radakovich is a $2 million a year athletic director. If you're going to have that in your hierarchy, he has to have a role and a title to support that kind of salary. So I think that's what it's all about. A, it's a promotion for him from just being director of athletics at Clemson. He's going to Miami to be a university vice president overseeing the athletic department. And it's also justification to pay him at the level that they're paying him. I think that's going to be about it on the questions for tonight. Yeah, we've pretty much covered everything else on the show. So that's going to do it for tonight's show. We will be back in 2 weeks on the 28th. We'll talk about the bowl game. We'll talk about anything else that comes up here over the next couple weeks. And we'll see where we're at then. We'll have gone through signing day. There'll be more guys going in the transfer portal, stuff like that. We'll probably have some coaches hired. So there should be enough to talk about with that in the bowl game. I don't know that we'll end up with a three-hour show in 2 weeks, but we will do some kind of show in 2 weeks to give you guys a voice once again. I want to thank Larry Bluestein for coming on the show. Thanks, Matt Schodel, taking the time to spend with us tonight. Until next time, we'll see you guys back on the message boards and on Good Morning Canesport, and we'll see what else comes up, and I'll say have a great night, everybody.